Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Damn it, shuffle my microphone around a little bit. It's early. It's 6 o'clock here, and this is what we start on Fridays, which is interesting because Thursdays we start a little bit later at 10 o'clock to accommodate our West Coast doctor, Judy Mikovits, for the World's Greatest Doctors panel. And she was off yesterday somewhere flying, somewhere saving the world, doing who knows what. But today we've got our usual folks, except for Amber. Amber Kemper is doing some big convention student thing, and so we're going to get her back next week, hear all about it, and get back into our Constitution report, which I miss already. I mean, Fridays are a kick around here, and Pianchi is already on the line. In fact, he was on the line before the show started. You must have something to say. Why don't I just let you get to it? Good morning, sir.
Yeah, I'm all fired up. Ain't going to take it no more.
Okay, good. Well, what ain't you going to take?
As time go by, we will see. How you doing, Greg? How's everything?
Actually, it's wonderful. I was hoping that you could sometime join our doctor's panel on Thursdays. You're certainly welcome to. You know, I mean, you call every other day of the show, which I absolutely love. But I don't think you've ever called into our doctors, and it's really an interesting group. Did you call in once before? Josie joins us. She was there for quite a bit of time.
I don't know if I did or not. Good morning to Josie.
Well,
but I don't know if I did or not, but I'll consider it. You know, you start at 10 o'clock on that day.
Yeah. Well, like I say, we do that too for our West Coast, Dr. Judy Mikovits, who's kind of like our team captain. And she's the one that really pioneered all this stuff against Dr. Fascist. And she goes back to the AIDS days when Dr. Fascist was killing people with AZT, as opposed to the New York doctors that discovered a wonderful drug called Bactrin. And apparently that took care of AIDS a whole lot more efficiently than AZT. And it makes perfect sense when you consider Dr. Fascist, all the people that he killed, by denying hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin in favor of remdesivir, which is a failed Ebola drug that destroys your kidneys and puts you on a ventilator, which eventually kills you anyway. So we have no love for Dr. Fascist around here.
They want to come out with something else with this monkeypox, just hang on to your seat.
What, some other failed drug? I call it the election pox. You know, it's the box pox. It's the voice of the people being taken. It's pretty crazy what's going on. Well, there's been a lot that happened this week, and we have some interesting guests next week too. We got Michelle Saltzman coming in. She's one of our local folks running for the state house in Florida, opposing Mike Hill, who actually held a position previously. She defeated him. He wants his job back. So Mike used to be on the show, but hasn't been on since I left WBY. Michelle was on the show, and now she's coming back next week, which is great. We also have Captain Tom Stewart, who is one of the many folks who was forced out of the military simply for exercising his constitutional right not to take a snake oil experimental jab. And so he'll be back with a couple more guests Wednesday. So it's going to be a busy week next week. This week, though, was incredible. Yesterday, oh, my God, if you heard the show, the things we covered, it was fascinating what we cover. From abortion to strategy to COVID to monkey. I don't know if we covered monkeypox. We covered it's like 3 hours. You really have to listen to it. It's hard to sum up all the things that we went over. But just the data, we went over tons of John Cullen, the map maker, you know, how they use the information. How it's and in fact he talked about tweeting our bill, both the Dr. Zelenko bill and our bill for product liability on vaccine makers to Australia, and it's gaining great interest down there. So Australians are tweeting this out too, and so we're international. We're going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. In fact, I've got another interview tonight. I had two on Monday. I've got one next week. And that's all from three of them are from the same network. Like I did one show and two other hosts go, yeah, I want to talk to that guy. So I was like, okay. So this is snowballing, Pianchi, big time. You know, just hang on. We're about to get very, very big. And so as I always hoped and hopefully planned for, the whole idea of Action Radio and the citizen legislature, you know, giving people the means by which to affect change peacefully, logically, and simply. I think that's the beauty of what we've got going here. And we'll see very soon as more and more hosts.
Citizens have
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Citizens have a right. Well, citizens already have the power to push the stop button mm-hmm. on what the federal government is doing and mm-hmm. also other, many other agencies. But they just are unaware of it, and those who are aware of it just won't use it. But I think mm-hmm. things are going to start changing a little bit at a time.
Well,
I'm happy to see that.
Yeah,
110. I'm happy to see the Russian courts done what they've done. I'm disappointed they gave this WNBA female player only 9 years. You should have got to complete 10 years for the crime that they committed. But it goes to show that your Black Lives Matter privileges don't work in other sovereign countries. You get away with it here with the politics at hand.
Well, I find it fascinating that the Brandon insurrection is all for getting Brittany Griner out of Russia and leave the January 6th people who did nothing, you know, still in jail in D.C. So it's like you commit a crime. You get your due process. You're convicted of that crime, and then they object to that. It's like it's the same old thing. The criminals get a pass, and the honest people exercising their rights get thrown in jail. I mean, that's the new America according to the globalist Marxists. So and I looked up Griner, and I didn't know because I heard her interviewed last night, and her voice, she sounds like a dude. So I thought, is this a dude? Well, apparently
it is a dude.
Well, see now what I read was that she. Yeah, I read that she's a she and a lesbian. And, of course, that gives, that gets points in the social status, too. But she actually was born female. And so but she doesn't sound like she's born female. So I'm like, okay.
They have self-identify, call them what they want to be called. At least, they body their choice. I want to speak on one other thing, too.
Yeah. Oh, feel free.
And we have in mind how they treated Kyle Rittenhouse during the incident where he was defending his life.
Mm-hmm.
And they said he crossed borders with illegal weapons. And they said he was, walking down the street, openly carrying and doing notorious things. But, just here recently in St. Louis, you had some blacks who was openly carrying, which I have no problem with. I think they got a right to openly carry. Mm-hmm. And, of course, in Missouri, if you got a license. But they were shooting up everything.
Well, that's not carrying, then. That's using. See, this is the thing that we talked about. We've talked about this with the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment ends when you start using a firearm. There is no provision in the Second Amendment for using a firearm. At that point, you come under statutory law. And people don't realize that. And this is the argument. Go ahead. Uh-huh.
I would bet, Greg, that some of them came from across the river out of Illinois where open carrying is illegal. So where is the news on this? That's what teased me off. They attacked the Kyle Rittenhouse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Talk to Shirley and Jim on that. I mean, they're our Second Amendment reporters. Shirley comes on at the bottom of the hour and Jim at the top of the next hour. I mean, that would be a great thing to ask them. I don't know. I haven't I've been so busy looking into what I'm looking into. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been a busy boy. I've been really busy with the show, the things that are going on, the different interviews. And what I'm going to try and do with all these different interviews is give them all different bills. And so each host has like a unique experience, but also we get the word out on all, many of our bills. I've got a package of 27 bills that I send out to people. And so with these different hosts, with different bills, it'll sort of spread the amazing things that we do here and all the different areas that we do them in. I want to shift over a little bit here before Shirley gets here because something unbelievable happened this week. And despite all the cheating, the good guys won. Carrie Lake and Mark Fincham and Blake, I don't know who he is, the guy that's going to be senator, the Republican senator. So it's like Trump won in Arizona. Arizona is the great hope. Arizona is where the election correction is going to take place. Arizona's held the only decent audit. They didn't follow through and decertify Brandon, which they should have by now. But at least they've done the audit. And if anybody's going to correct the 2020 election, it's going to be Arizona. It's going to be Carrie Lake, Mark Fincham, and Blake, I forgot his name. Well, I'll get to him next week in the Senate. But those are the two, Carrie Lake and Mark Fincham. And it's fascinating that every single article except in the Gateway Pundit. I mean, literally, I went through, I think, 5 pages of search for articles. I couldn't find one positive one. They all said the same thing. Election denier, Trump supporting, you know, enforcers of the mistaken view that that Trump won, yada, yada. They all said the same crap. It's like they all come from the same news factory. You know, okay, here's your product for today. You know, where's my news? Where's my news sound effect? Hang on a second. Let's do this here. You know, and they give it to them, and they all repeat it. It's like you ever see those screens? They'll have like 30 screens. They're all saying the same thing at the same time. And here's the news for today. Hot off the presses. This is what you're allowed to say. The factory news from the News Factory, presented by, you know, and that's what you get. You get the same stuff. But they all start off. Well, I've got a bunch of articles. I'll get to them later. But just this whole idea. The Kerry Lake, Mark Fincham, and Blake, I'll get his name at some point, won despite the fact that they cheated. And here's the other interesting thing I found, too, that the Arizona counties, Maricopa, which is Phoenix, and Pinal, P-I-N-A-L, County, or Pinal County, however it's pronounced, they cheated, too. They cheated exactly as they cheated in 2020. They actually bolstered the case of election fraud by cheating exactly the same way they did in 2020 while still denying it at the same time. it's comical. It's like Laurel and Hardy election politics. And if you don't know who those folks are, just look them up. But what do you think? I mean, this is incredibly good news. And other than Gateway Pundit, we're the only ones that are saying this is incredibly good news.
Well, that is good news. There's another news source out there. I just can't think of the name of it. Mm-hmm. And they have some commentators that are very good in their conservative leaning, and, you know, putting the truth out there.
Yeah.
So, yes, you're absolutely right. You're going to be at the top of the hour here pretty soon.
Well, yeah. Well, for our other reports, what we've got? So we got time. We've got about 19 minutes? 18 minutes now. We got time. We got time to chat a little bit. I got some articles on this, but here's what's so fascinating about this. There are so many.
No, I didn't mean the top of Blog Top Hour. I meant the top of News Hour. You know, you're going to be the 6 o'clock news that when people come home from work and they sit there in their chair and they got their eyes peeled on the screen and up pop Greg Finglas.
Really? I don't know if I want to do TV though. I can't do. I don't see TV. I got a problem with TV. Because TV is too visual. And even the, you know, I have an interview tonight that's audio, that's radio. And I like those better. In fact, I did those two last week. They're both good. But I think the video one, you tend to watch more. And that divides your brain. And I think you pay more attention when it's radio because you actually have to listen because there's nothing really to look at. I mean, you can look at, you know, whatever's in your room or on your computer screen. But if you're actually listening, it makes a big, big difference. Anyway, I got some other news I want to talk about here before we get to some of the stuff, but that's the big news. First of all, thank you for the compliment. I'm not trying to dismiss it, but it would be interesting if people, you know, they start listening to Action Radio in their cars in the morning, which they should, and when it was more universal, people around the country, you know, they don't think to tune into their boring commercial station saying the same thing they've said for 50 years. They actually tune into us in the morning. You know, we become drive time. That's going to be huge. We can be drive time on the way home with the podcast for people that miss it in the morning or are doing other stuff. They can catch us on the way home. You know, all those that work at home can listen. And you can listen anytime you want. Listen, you don't have to listen to the whole show. Listen to part of it. That's why I do show notes. You know, we have a timeline. Once you start the show and it takes about 20 seconds to load, you can click anywhere you want in the show. You know, yesterday we had some amazing things that happened with the different guests. We have Christian Elliott, who's a life coach, health coach, Christian minister, combines all those. And his thing is to get off the grid. So he was talking yesterday. You know, he's one of the early people like me and the doctors that come on. You know, we were right there at the beginning. This is wrong. This is a hoax. You don't need this vaccine. We've got a cure. We've got treatments. This is a bunch of BS. It's a stupid mandate. It's unconstitutional. They can't do this. Anybody that says they can is lying. And there was somebody that just did you hear about this? The Tampa DA that Ron DeSantis fired, the Soros DA, who said that churches can't meet, that emergency declarations are absolutely constitutional. Everything he said was wrong. Okay, the churches can't meet. Declarations of emergency are constitutional. We can exercise any power we want. And then he quotes the Bible and says, well, you're supposed to love your neighbor, which means you have to do what we say and not meet in church. And it was just so much crap. It was crazy. But DeSantis dumped a Soros DA. Why can't the other states do that?
That is great. I wish he could find it for lying.
Well, there's a good question. You know, how much responsibility? See, government people are immune from their own incompetence and their own criminal action, unless it's blatantly obvious. Now, did he commit a crime? Or did he just was he just negligent and took all the power into his own hands where he said, I'm going to enforce the laws I want. I'm not going to enforce the laws I don't want. I'm going to make stuff up. Now, did he actually violate a law by doing that? I don't think so. I don't think he committed a crime like, larceny, grand theft.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, he did. Not only that, he's also demonstrating mental illness. Only someone with mental illness would blatantly violate the U.S. Constitution as this person has. He has a mental problem, and he needs to be brought in, laid on the couch, and interviewed, and also kept from his present position.
Yeah, I don't know what provisions there are in code with punishments. The best one is Title 18, Section 241, conspiracy against rights. If two or more people conspire to oppress or suppress the exercise or enjoyment of any constitutional right, that's a year in jail and a $10,000 fine. I don't know how old that is, but that goes for anything. That would include Congress. It doesn't specify non-government employees only. So anybody that conspires to oppress your rights is guilty of a conspiracy and can be thrown in jail for it under federal law, even though that federal law, technically the Constitution doesn't give the federal government jurisdiction over crime like that. State law can certainly do it if states actually pass those laws. So I'm not sure where that stands. But I don't know if a DA refuses to prosecute, is there a technical crime in there? Because they have discretion. You know, everything DAs do is that's what plea bargains are all about. You know, pleading to a lesser crime.
You have in Chicago, you have some of Kim Fox's, the first black female prosecutor for Cook County, Illinois.
Uh-huh.
She's been doing the same thing, letting people go to the point where you got some of her staff members are quitting.
Well, that's because she's incompetent. But is she liable? If she lets somebody go and refuses to prosecute and that person goes out and kills somebody the next, she's not liable for that.
Well, it's something wrong with her mind. She's got a mental problem.
Yeah.
Well, yes, but it's a story that needs to be put out there. We could put it out there on Donald Trump, right?
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
wanted to have him examined mentally, but Joe Biden stumbling up steps, not consider his stumbling down the steps. He's giving a pass.
You know, it's interesting you're talking about that too, being a mental disorder. Now I know the context. I was just reading one of my notes from yesterday, and the context this came up in, Dr. Jim Thorpe was talking about Romans chapter 1. You know, without God, if you don't have God in your life, you become deluded. You actually live in delusion, and it makes sense to me that these government officials think they are God themselves. They have lost God. They are their own gods. And when you do that, you become deluded and you start doing crazy things. And so I think a lot of the problems that we find in the government, in the Dr. Fauci's, in the dictators, you know, all the folks that are basically taking the Nazis and the communists, the worst of the Nazis and the communists, and trying to bring to our government. You know, they have no God but themselves or government. They worship at the altar of the pillars of government rather than, you know, the gates of heaven. And they've missed it. They don't understand that they are not the highest power. You know, they think they can change the climate with legislation. These people are so arrogant. But if Romans chapter 1 means anything, and I'm not a big biblical scholar. I'm just not. I don't quote scripture. I have trouble. I can't read it. I mean, I'm so ADHD. I get halfway through a verse and I'm already thinking of other stuff. So I have problems. The Bible is just not written in language that's very accessible to me. But the idea that if you don't believe in God, you're easily deluded and you live in a delusional world does make sense to me because you have no perspective. You have no hierarchy of the order of things. You know, you think the world is some giant accident.
You know,
go ahead.
This mental condition, it runs very broad and deep. For mm-hmm. instance, take Ben and Jerry's, the ice cream parlor place that's owned mm-hmm. by Unilever. They made the statement that they aren't going to sell ice cream in the settlement areas where the Jews have reclaimed their land. They're saying it's Palestinian occupied. Well, that's not true. But most important of all, why would you create such a racist act and deny the people mm-hmm. in this area and elsewhere the ability to enjoy your consumable products. Here we go again with these corporations setting the standards, these quote, these woke actions that they're doing by denying. You've seen the same thing with the Major League Baseball, with the All-Star game in Atlanta, Georgia. They moved to Colorado. And you see the same thing with other entities like executive leasing. They don't want to accept those people who have lifetime memberships with the NRA toward discount. It just goes on and on and on.
You know, there's some great potential for humor here with Jewish ice cream. What flavors do you think we would have? You know, Tel Aviv, tropical, mango punch, you know, matzah.
Well, it would be whatever they want. But I tell you one thing, I would not consume the Colin Kaepernick brand that Ben and Jerry's offers. I would not do that.
You go. Yeah, see, they got political, and some of it was funny. You know, Jerry Garcia, or Cherry Garcia, it was one of their flavors for Jerry Garcia, the Grateful Dead guitar player. See, that was funny. I think that when Ben and Jerry's actually owned it, when Ben and Jerry ran it, it was different. I mean, there were still goofy liberals, and that was okay, who were, you know, real free market capitalists there for a while. But they, you know, that's fine. I don't care. I think their product was kind of fun. You know, this is, I tried it a few times. It's not bad. I'm more of a Haagen-Dazs, but that's just me. Of course, I like the Hershey's ice cream that's in some of the stores out there. Hershey's makes great ice cream, by the way. I should get them as a sponsor now that I've shamelessly plugged them. I just think Jewish ice cream, the whole concept would be great. But there is no Palestine. Palestine is a made-up place. It comes when Claire Lopez used to be on the show, she talked about this, and that the history of Palestine is a made-up country by the British. There is no such thing. And the name comes from some either Iranian or Iraqi language way back when. But there is no Palestine. There is no Palestinian people. These people are refugees from other places, Jordan, Egypt, things like that. There is no Palestinian state. There is no Palestinian nation. There is no history. Israel is the country that goes back to biblical times with the claim on that land. I mean, that's just pure and simple. So also the nonsense of a two-state solution. There's a one-state solution. There's Israel, which actually has the only country that has both Jewish and Arab, both Muslim and Christian people in its parliament. You know, it's basically a bi-religious nation, which is hard enough to do. I mean, the Jews didn't have to do that, but they did. So this idea, that, especially when you get the Rashida Tlaibs and the other folks that are just lying to the American public, that we need a two-state solution, that Palestine has a claim on this land too. It's a bunch of nonsense. They have no claim on anything. They're a made-up country. And if the other Arab countries, Jordan, Syria, Egypt had any decency at all, they take Palestinian so-called people back because that's where they came from, you know. So it's a very interesting situation. I'm still thinking of Jewish ice cream flavors, though. I kind of intrigued by that idea. Actually, I have a friend of mine up in Brooklyn. You know, I'm trying to get her for a restaurant, for like our Brooklyn restaurant review, and we need a good Jewish deli. You know, lox. We need lox flavored ice cream. We got to think of a good name for it, though. You know, bagels and ice cream, you know, bagels and cream cheese ice cream. I mean, there's some real potential here for good Jewish ice cream when you think about it.
Yeah, cream cheese is good.
Yeah, cream cheese is great. So when you cream cheese ice cream, you know, we'll call it lox and, you know, what, something else. You know, I mean, the possibilities are wonderful here for some really good Jewish ice cream. No one ever thinks of things like that. You know, I don't know why not. I didn't think of it until you mentioned it, but yeah. Anyway, other things going on in the news. We've got a few more minutes here. My dear Congressman Matt Gaetz has put forward a decent bill, but nowhere near a strong enough bill. And he's actually doing a meeting next week, which I'm going to try and attend and give him the stronger bill, which I already have given him and everybody else in a press release. And that's our government, you know, our disarmament of unconstitutional government officers, the one that takes the 200,000 armed bureaucrats that have no business being armed because they have no constitutional authority to be armed, takes their guns and gives it to the civilian marksmanship program so they can be distributed back to American citizens. In fact, that's a requirement. The civilian marksmanship requires you to prove your American citizenship, to be over 18, and to be in a marksmanship program so you actually know what you're doing. You know, if you're going to be get a gun at a greatly reduced price from either military surplus or government surplus. His bill just wants to limit future ammo purchases of the IRS. That's just tinkering. That's tiny. That's nothing.
Well, we need to talk to him, Greg. We need to bring him in on the carpet and talk to him.
Well, I keep trying. He doesn't call my show anymore. He used to. He used to call all the time. In fact, I got an interview. I may play it just for fun sometime. I may play it in our last hour if you're curious. The last time Matt Gaetz was on our show, and we talked about the bill, the mandatory citizenship question on the census. This is back in 2018. And he said, look, this is a viable way to get bills to Congress. So, you know, I've already got the congressional stamp of approval. It's on tape, as they say. It's on recording. Or digital, I guess, in this case. But I'll play it for you if you're curious. Another one I'll play for you, too, I think you'd really appreciate. Dr. Walter Williams was my first big interview back in 2017. And basically told me, you know, you have to succeed with Action Radio. This has to work. He says, I don't know what else is going to do anything. But if the people don't, you know, take charge and put forward the bills that we want, that the laws that we want to be governed by, he doesn't see a whole lot of hope. He doesn't see any chance the government will fix itself. And we know that because they stole the election. They tried to steal it again, and they're doing the same old stuff. Deep state doesn't change. So that bill was interesting. Actually, we've covered the ones I wanted. The only other thing I wanted to talk about in the 3 or 4 minutes we have before Shirley gets here are the two Democrat senators. Now, the Senate, as we know, is a majority Republican Senate where the Republicans refuse to take power. You've got 48 Democrats and 2 independents. And there's some stupid rule that the Republicans have never overturned where if you caucus, in other words, you talk with one party, then you can actually be counted as part of that party even though you're independent. So that's the cake and eat it too provision. And so the Democrat independents, Bernie Sanders and what's his name, King, Senator King of Maine, are independent. They are not Democrats. They are not registered Democrats. They have no official affiliation with the Democrat Party, yet they're counted as Democrats when it comes to the committee chairs and the power in the Senate. So you've got Republican geldings that gave up power there. They allowed 2 Georgia senators to cheat and not unseat them. And then they allow the Democrats to have a majority when they only have 50, which is really 48 plus 2, because Kamala Harris can break a tie. But she's not part of the Senate either. She's never part of the Senate. She's just there to break a tie as vice president. But she can't be counted as a part of the majority simply because she's a Democrat, because she is not part of the Senate. She's vice president, and you can't hold 2 offices. So for all those reasons, the Republicans actually are the majority in the Senate, yet they refuse to accept it. And because of that, we have all these horrible things happening, and the only people that are being considered for this new inflation-reducing bill, which greatly increases inflation, are Joe Manchin, who we talked about earlier this week, and Kristen Sinema, who I'm going to talk about next week once I learn more about her. But why is it that Chuck Schumer is negotiated with 2 other Democrats for this bill? And yet there's no Republican. I got an article. There's actually, you know, not a single Republican is named in that bill, yet they are the majority in the Senate. It's fascinating. Pianki?
Everything you said is right on time.
So the geldings, which leads to my question, you know, anybody that expects the Republicans to take power after the midterms is in for a rude awakening. You know, it's like beat me again, hurt me again. You know, Republican voters are like abused spouses. They get hurt every time, and then the abuser comes back and says, well, I'll be nicer to you next time. Really, everything's going to be fine next time. Well, next time the same thing happens. They get beaten up again. They get abused again. And then the abuser comes back, the Republican majority comes back and says, oh, just elect us next time. It'll be different. You know, that's irrational. That's insane. That we need to come up with, like, you know, beaten voter syndrome or something like that. Because Republican voters are so stupid, they're going to buy this again. It's like, we'll beat them in the midterms. The Republicans will be different. They'll take over the House. They'll take over the Senate. And they'll change things. No, they won't. Only Trump will, and Trump supporters will. Which is why it's so important that Carrie Lake and Mark Finchin and Blake, what's his name, Masters? You know, one in Arizona. You know, we've got 3 parties.
These rhino Republicans, like the ones that voted to impeach Donald Trump, which is totally illegal, and I see where
the House wasn't a majority.
Yeah, I see where a couple of them has lost. But it doesn't make any difference if you do take control. If you don't govern, then what the heck's the use?
Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't take control when they won. You know, the last term, they didn't. You know, when the Republicans won the House in 2018. They let the Democrats overturn 7 Republican seats in California without objection. And because of that, Nancy Pelosi assumed illegally the speakership and proceeded to conduct impeachments against Donald Trump, which were completely illegal because she wasn't really speaker. The Republicans won, and yet they gave up power. So even if the Republicans do win in the November midterms, there's no guarantee that they are not going to give up power again to the Democrats or listen to the Democrats. I think that they believe that the natural order is the Democrats lead, the Republicans are losers, they follow, and anything that is contrary to that simply doesn't count. That's what I think. What do you think?
Well, the method of they going about operating is really disgusting, and
yeah,
there needs to be a drastic change in the whole ordeal. Did you say Josie was holding on?
No, surely is. And I'm going to play your theme right now. Now, we've got two parties in this country. You've got kind of like this sort of I'm not quite sure how the split is. You've got the Democrat Marxists. You've got the gelding cowards. And then you've got Trump supporters. And you've got America Firsters. That's really how it divides up. Well, surely, see what she thinks. When one is faced with a crisis, you find your true character. How you react to such an emergency can determine the rest of your life. Two paths present themselves for you to choose. One leads to tragedy. The other leads to becoming a new person. Shirley Wachtel, a survivor of a dangerously abusive relationship, is that new person. She is the author of Heels to Holster. She is a firearms instructor, motivational speaker, women's empowerment advocate, and a reporter for Action Radio. So now, here is the DC Project, Women and Guns, with Shirley Wachtel. Hello, Shirley. What do you think?
Good morning. What am I thinking about?
Oh, you just joined us. Yeah. See, I should give a little warning to everybody.
I was kind of listening. As I'm running around doing other things, getting ready. You're talking about the different parties, how we don't.
Well, I've sort of decided there's either two parties or three parties. The two parties would be the Marxist gelding party, made up of Democrats and Republicans, and then America Firsters, which are Trump supporters and Trump. That's one party. Or we could look at it that there are Democrat Marxists as one party, Republican geldings, which are subservient to the Democrat Marxists, as the other party. And then the third party is Trump and Trump supporters, America Firsters, patriots, independents, people that actually believe in this country, instead of the globalist power of government to rule everybody. So one of those two scenarios, depending on which one you think is appropriate, either, Democrat Republicans versus Trump or separate, Marxists, and then geldings. and Trump. Either way, that's how I see it. And I don't expect much from the midterms. Even if the geldings win, they're still going to hand power back to the Democrats because that's what they do. Because they can't stand, actually leading. Their job is to support Democrats in racing us towards Marxism while giving a fake controlled opposition, which doesn't do anything. And that's how I see it.
Yeah, well, let me start by saying I'm going to define DC Project and how I got into it and then elaborate on that a little bit. So DC Project, which is a nationwide group of women, we're out there defending the Second Amendment. And before I got involved in DC Project, I knew about the government because you learn it, used to learn it in high school. I guess you don't do that anymore. But at the time, from up north, family, the farmer, they were usually Democrats, and Democrats and Republicans were different than they are today, as more I'm finding out about the government. And as I got involved, because what DC Project gets involved, but they meet with their legislators, representatives, and we put a face to the women defending the Second Amendment. So learning more and more about government, and we've gone over this with Jim, ever since I took this position, my blood pressure is now higher than it ever has been because I'm learning things I never realized.
Yeah, see, knowledge is a scary thing. That's why I need an outlet. That's why I work out a lot and, bike ride, hit the gym, and play a lot of electric guitar at night because I need an outlet. So, that's how I can do this the next day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's no longer a straight, like it used to be Democrat, Republican. And you're right. I don't think some people, not saying all of them, getting elected do have the leadership quality. They don't want to stand up to even if it's their party that they disagree with. But I think also they're forgetting that they're there based on votes, and they're there for the voice of the people that voted them in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very proud to announce, because we've had a couple women running for office from the D.C. Project, and Rebecca Schmo, which I'm trying to get her, see if I can get her on the show next week. She is in Kansas, and she won her primary seat for District 59 for the House. I know.
Let's give her a round of applause. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, so, I think it's very important to remind certain people that, they are there for the people. It's not for their, it's their opinions. They have to find out what's
parties. Let me just jump in here for a second. It's parties that are the problem, because once you get in, the party gets you in, and then they give you the talk. And I talked about the talk,
yeah.
Under the Capitol January 6th, but the talk is you have a choice to make. You can have a long career here. You can be very successful. You can travel. You can make, millions of extra dollars on insider trading and speaking. Well, they don't actually say it like this, but, speaking
right.
fees and endorsements and insider trades like Pelosi does and all that kind of stuff. Or, but all you have to do is vote the way the party tells you to vote. Okay. Or you can be independent. You'll have to fund yourself. You'll be kicked out by the next rhino that takes your place or Marxist. Good luck. if you want to be independent, that's fine. But, we're not going to support you. So the real problem in Congress and the state legislatures is parties. We need to create a situation where no one can belong to a party while serving in a legislature.
But also the people being elected, they also need to know it's not a popularity contest. You're not always going to be going with the – sometimes you have to go against the grain.
Yeah, but they get the money for campaigns.
Doesn't everybody want to be loved?
Well, yeah, but their party is what tells them what to do. You look at the Democrats, especially,
right.
are marching in lockstep, and the Republicans pretty much march in lockstep too. How many true independents do you think we have in Congress? 3, 4, 5 maybe, who actually vote their conscience no matter what it is, that aren't subservient to parties?
Even having the party dictate what your votes or what your thoughts are, you have
mm-hmm.
to stand up to that. And sometimes it's hard for people if you don't have that in you where you're going to disagree, because you're not going to be a popular person. You're not going to be in the table with all the popular kids,
Yeah,
high
but
school.
You don't get your campaign chairmanship. You don't get your money
exactly.
I mean, you don't get your committee chair. You don't get your campaign
right.
funds. You don't get advertising. The party doesn't support you. You're an outcast. That's
exactly,
the
and you have to have the strength to, if that's the case.
Well, who does
stand up against that?
Good.
I know.
Let's hope the DC Project women do. I think they would. I mean, otherwise they wouldn't be DC Project women. So I think that's a much better chance. That's why the non-lawyer, non-subservient, the government class, the people who have not been in government their entire lives, that go in and do it. That's our best hope.
Exactly. And then after I get into my Teal for Two-Way story,
mm-hmm.
what I've been thinking about is, how do we find out about our candidates that are running for office, especially if they're not incumbents? Incumbents, they have voting records, but other ones don't. But that's just
put them on my show.
I'll
find out.
Before I get,
you got to ask them questions. Ask them real questions.
Well, not everybody can go on the show, but anyway, that's a good idea. But anyway, before I know Jim's going to be jumping on here, and we can chat about what.
Well, you guys can
here.
Ask some questions. You can do your own interviews at DC Project
yeah.
around the country. Each state chapter president like you can interview Florida candidates for DC Project.
Well, that's true. Okay.
You got the skills.
Okay.
You can do
Good
it.
Idea.
You're in radio.
I'll put that on my to-do list. My idea list from Greg.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into our so we don't – get off track here too much. The Teal for Two-Way story that I posted.
Yes.
This one takes place in Illinois. Now, the Teal for Two-Way, anyone that hasn't been on the show or hasn't heard this before, the Teal for Two-Way story is a story of how someone used a firearm to save their lives, defend other people as well.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of times that doesn't get a whole lot of media coverage. And today's story is coming from USCCA Concealed Carry magazine.
Mm-hmm.
USCCA stands for United States Concealed Carry Association. They're like an insurance company. If you have a concealed carry license, you'd want to check into this in the event that you'd have to defend yourself. They provide you with an attorney. They provide you with bail money if needed, if you happen to get arrested until it gets sorted out in the courts. But highly recommend you looking into that if you are a concealed carry weapons license holder. But this story takes place in Illinois. It's at a tobacco shop. Three men came in. One was armed, accosted the employees of the Rock Island Tobacco Shop late one evening. And seeing the armed man, one of the employees took up a firearm that's kept in the store. He fired on the three robbers, fatally wounding one and seriously wounding another. The local police reviewed the available evidence and stated the shooting was justified self-defense. Aggravated robbery charges are pending against the surviving robbery suspects, and this was in Illinois.
I didn't have a further comment, although there's another story I'm curious about, too. The shotgun guy, the 80-year-old shotgun person that I guess took like arm and shoulder injuries to some perp that was trying to invade his store. But tell me more about this Illinois thing, because Illinois is a gun control state, and it seems to me that even in these rabidly anti-freedom gun control areas, they're actually lighting up. It used to be they would prosecute the gun owner. First thing in the story is it was a registered and legally owned gun, as if that makes a difference to self-defense. But secondly, they usually go after the person that did that. You know, they violated the criminal's rights by, defending themselves. I don't hear that as much anymore in stories because the police can't be there and they know it. And I think they're kind of grateful now that people are defending themselves.
Exactly.
What do you think?
And I think the law enforcement people I talk to around here, they're all for someone properly trained to be able to defend themselves. Because they understand they can't be everywhere all the time. They're not, like a law enforcement officer in your pocket type deal. And right now, that's another thing I'm trying to do research on is the thinking of people today is it's like, how did we get this to this point where people,
conditioning,
they're like
brainwashing, propaganda, apathy.
Oh, and they're,
how am I doing?
Like walking that tight line, one little push and all of a sudden they just, this anger all comes out and people are just, road rage to, just walking into a school and, just killing people.
That's about fame.
When I was in high school,
that's about fame and immortality. Yeah, no, I wouldn't either, but.
So going towards that. So is it our electronic? Because I heard you mention something as I was passing by earlier today about somebody said for health reasons to like shut down what did you say? Someone you had on the show to turn out electronics maybe? Is that what you were talking about?
When was this?
No,
earlier today?
I was going to recap about the doctor or somebody. Someone's health.
We talked about a bunch of stuff yesterday. We talked about mass psychosis for one thing. In the conditioning of people, but I don't think that's what you're getting at. I'm trying to think now.
You just mentioned something that they need to just basically sound like you need to shut down. And I what I read that to mean is you need to just get away from electronics, get away from your Facebook.
Oh, I was talking about having an outlet. No, I was talking to you about having an outlet. Is that what you're talking about?
No.
Away from
that's
the news?
Okay,
something different. All right, I've forgotten. Okay, that's all right.
That's all right. It's just,
I could go back and listen, but I'm doing a show right
maybe
now.
Maybe I read something into what you were saying earlier, but does it have to do with our kids and being preoccupied with all these electronic games? And now they're not kids anymore; they're actually grown-ups. And now they're thinking, is it distorted? Can they have conversations? Because I'm talking to, we're kind of off the DC project, but this is kind of my opinion. As I'm talking to owners of businesses, and they're doing interviews with young people, and they're just astonished how unsocial they are. I mean, this is customer service. You have to, talk to people. You have to present a face that you're enjoying your job, and you come in there, and I actually told the owner, I said, is she a new hire? Because she doesn't look happy at all. And she goes, I know, you have to teach these kids young people, they're not kids anymore, how to interact with people. And is that because of our electronics?
Yes.
I don't know.
Simple answer is yes, it is. They are so connected. Well, it's like I've worked with kids. I do my part-time Sunday job around a lot of kids, you know, high school, college. And it's fascinating that any time off, they go immediately to their phones. They don't talk to each other. They go to their phones. You know, and they're probably talking to each other on their phones. They're talking, texting, and things like that. But the medium of communication, I've seen people sitting next to each other texting. It's incredible that the ability to converse is gone, the ability to interact. You know, social media has taken over for social interaction. And that's a real problem, you know, because people can't talk to each other. And this is where, and as far as you mentioned earlier, the assassinations in the schools and the shopping malls, I think Mall of America just had a shooting, I think, last night. I think they should offer a 10% discount for anybody openly caring, but that's just me. But a lot of that is based on fame, because it's based on social media. The reason these people put their intended crimes on social media is because they want to be famous. Yeah, and they get famous because the media reports their name, reports their whole life story. They're immortalized forever in the news. And you look at the Buffalo assassin. He wasn't a shooter. He was an assassin. And that's one of the things he talked about. He says, yeah, man, the fame. That's why they're doing it. Because they know that they can live forever on social media and news media. Well, you take the fame away from them, you're going to take away a lot of these problems. But, Pianki can probably comment on this too. But the ability to interact, to have a conversation. You look at relationships are down too. You know, young men and women are not having relationships. They're not getting married. They're not having kids. They're not even dating in a lot of cases. The guys are playing video games. I don't know what the women are doing. You can tell me that. So whatever it is, they're not interacting. They're not doing what, young men and women used to do, at least not as much.
True. And so then they pick up the tool of the firearm, and then that becomes a sanctioned crime, so that politicians can take away our rights. So it's like a vicious circle. So how do we break that vicious circle?
Get back to basic values.
I don't know.
Get back to what's right and what's wrong. They've reversed what's right and wrong, right?
Exactly. But where did you learn that first? You learned that in your parents. So are parents not participating? How do you get parents to participate in raising their children? And it just goes on and on.
Well, you talk to your kids. I raised a daughter.
But now are we at a generation where they don't do that because they were brought up and they were texting each other and they don't know how to talk to even their kids? Is that possible? Or is that where we're at?
Well, it's not how to talk to your kids, but it's up to parents to talk to their kids. It's not up to kids to talk to their parents. You know, the parents are the adults in the room.
What I'm saying, but the parents themselves don't know how to communicate.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Are we to that generation? Yeah, so I don't know.
You know, when I talk to younger folks, when I have that opportunity, some will chat and some won't. But once you get them talking, they actually have a lot to say. And they're kind of almost grateful for the opportunity that somebody will listen. And so I think parents need to not only talk to their kids, but listen to their kids. It doesn't mean the kids are right. You know, you're still going to, teach what the differences of right and wrong. It's not that hard to do. But with my kid, I talked to her constantly, and I was a weekend dad, when she was a certain age. And but even, before marriage ended, I was talking to my kid. We used to go off and, go see San Francisco and ride ferry boats and climb mountains and run down sand dunes. And we did, dad and daughter stuff. We were all over the place. We're always talking, always, watching the sunset and talking and sitting in traffic and talking and walking around Fisherman's Wharf and talking and exploring different neighborhoods of the city of San Francisco and talking, riding cable cars and talking. Yeah. We're always talking. We never shut up.
Exactly.
Much like this radio show. I never shut up. So we're all talking.
You're used
but it works.
To that.
Yeah.
But there are parents or people out there that know how to do that, I guess.
Maybe we need to teach parents how to talk. Tell them to talk to their grandparents.
Parenting classes. Maybe parenting classes. Oh, how to?
You talk with someone in common. Like, how do you talk to your first-time firearm students? You have to establish a trust factor, same as parents and kids. You have to have a common base to talk about. Parents can talk about what the kids are interested in. How do you do that with your first-time students?
I don't have a problem with it. What I'm saying is our the parents of these kids.
Apply what you use with first-time firearm students? Can you, would that work with parents and
to
kids?
Apply to who?
Well, teaching parents how to talk to their kids.
Oh, I don't. The parents I know, their kids are like the people I know that have kids. They brought them up right.
Well, that's good. Okay, so we need guidelines for the rest of the.
I don't know. Yeah. I guess it's, you know, just who you hang out with. But anyway, so let's. I'm going to change direction here.
Okay.
Because I do want to get thoughts on, because elections are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if some have already come and gone, primaries.
Mm-hmm.
So, other than the fact that, you know, you actually bring them on the show, you ask them a bunch of questions. If you don't have time to do that as a person reviewing the candidates, is there anything that anyone can recommend on doing that? If they're not an incumbent, they don't have a voting record, because, you know, this day and age we're finding out just because what they say on their platform isn't how they always vote or what they actually believe. They just say to get where they want to be.
Read their resume, read their history, read the bills that they've voted for, read their record.
But if they don't,
whatever record
I'm saying, if they're not incumbents, they're new.
Well, find out what job they did. You know, were they a manager of a company? Were they on welfare their whole life? Were they a liberal college professor? Take a look at who they are.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Past history jobs. Good. That's a good
one. Sure. And you look at, it's like when I was a flight instructor, and I could generally tell who are the best students and who are going to be the worst ones a lot of the time, what they did. The best students were, you know, people that fix things, contractors, plumbers, mechanics, hairstylists, people that did things, people that work with their hands, people that manage, small business owners. Those were the caterers. You know, those are my best flight students. The worst, doctors and lawyers, because A, they think they're God. And B, they're extremely specialized. And you can't do that in an airplane. And so I could tell very quickly, and I used to talk to my students beforehand. They didn't know I was, you know, figuring them out real fast, because you have to. If you're going to go up on a small plane with a perfect stranger, you know, that's not a normal situation. So you better be able to sum up people pretty quickly and decide which ones you're not going to fly with. And that happened. There were people I refused to fly with just because. But that's how I did it. And you can apply those same things to an election. You know, find out, talk to them, find out or if you can't talk to them directly, you know, see who they've talked to, read interviews, you know, read anything, read reports, read anything they've published, read any kind of stuff, whatever you can find on people to give you an idea of who they are, because people don't change that much. Good people are generally going to be good people. Now, they may be misinformed, they may need an education process, but good people generally stay good people, and bad people generally stay bad people. And so if you determine that someone is lying, you know, if someone has convictions for, you know, things like embezzlement or stuff like that, you know, maybe off the books, they're a great person now, but, you know, why would you want to vote for somebody? Well, you wouldn't put somebody in the budget committee that was convicted of embezzlement. Okay. And yet, you know, so, I mean, well, give me an example. Who's running for an office that you want to find out about? And we'll see if we can analyze that.
Well, no, it was just a general question, because a lot of people, I'm thinking other people are thinking the same thing. Then you get endorsements, and I think endorsements will probably go a long way. You know, if Trump endorses
depends if they want money.
If Trump endorses somebody, then I'm thinking most Trump people that like Trump are going to just go, oh, he endorsed him, I'm going to vote for him.
That's a good one, because Trump actually looks at the people he endorses. In fact, we talked about in the first half hour, I'm going to talk about in the last hour, Carrie Lake, Mark Fincham, and Blake, I've forgotten his name, the guy that got the primary for senator. But I want to concentrate on Mark Fincham, who's Secretary of State, who's going to really look at the 2020 election, and Carrie Lake, who's governor, who's going to declare, she's going to declare that we are under invasion, you know, from an open southern border. So Arizona is the place where the great election correction is going to take place. They're going to overrule their Brandon electors and declare Trump electors the correct ones and start to reverse this horrible situation that we're in right now with an occupation government destroying the country. So you want to talk about something fabulous, you know, and everybody's said all this stuff against them. Now you look at Arizona, okay? Every single article except for the ones in Gateway Pundit condemned the election of Carrie Lake and Mark Fincham in Arizona. They're Trump deniers. They're election deniers. They're, you know, everything they say is wrong. They're putting bogus conspiracy theories that Trump won the election. Well, Trump did win the election. It's not a bogus conspiracy theory. It's the truth. But everybody's going, and yet Arizona voted these people in. I mean, I think Carrie Lake won every county in Arizona. So with all the press against them, with Mike Pence, you know, the deep state, you know, ring kissing, you know, make my bones by getting rid of Trump traitor, you know, was for the other person, Carrie Lake's opponent. I forgot her name. She doesn't matter. Same thing. They were all against Mark Fincham's opponent. But the most patriotic, Trump-supported election correctors in Arizona won despite almost every media putting out overwhelming propaganda from the news factory against them. So how did the voters know? Well, they went beyond the news. There's a great case study for you.
There you go. All righty. Okay.
A lot's the way it is, Walter Cronkite. What else you got? Got more stuff? Got gun stuff? Are there more traitors out there in the nation trying to take our guns away?
Well, there's always them. They're hiding everywhere.
Well, how about this? You hear about this new third party, Andrew Yang, and his communist crew that I post a story that from Ammo Land, I think, or Truth. I think it's Truth About Guns that says he's just a total loser and don't believe the, and my contention is if two parties are horrible, why would you want a third one? It just doesn't make any sense to me. Well, I can go to the
that's
page.
True.
Or I can ask Jim. Jim, what do you think?
About the third party that they've joined up with there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I think, just the Democrat light party, I think, is the best way to describe it.
Makes sense to me. I'm going to go to my gun page and see the stuff he wrote. Anyway, Shirley, what more stuff that you wanted to talk about? We've been sidetracking.
No.
Which I do anyway.
Do you have any? Hey, Jim, what's going on? What's going on in the world that can get my blood pressure up some more today?
Well, let me play.
Why do you want me to get your blood pressure up? That's terrible.
You just do it. You're so good at it.
I got a story for you before I play Jim's theme. The FBI has declared the Betsy Ross flag and the Gadsden flag, don't tread on me, as symbols of terrorism. Think about that while I play this. Out of the forests of Virginia to the swamps of southern Florida comes a great man who carries a big gun. Probably a Desert Eagle, 50 caliber. He served our nation in the military. He protected the citizenry in law enforcement. And now he is a director of Florida Carry, trying to make the Second Amendment, as written, a reality for all Americans. He is Jim Dice with the Second Amendment Report for Action Radio. Anyway, you two can carry on. Feel free. I'm just going to sit here.
Well, I like, Greg, that you brought up the FBI's use of the Betsy Ross flag and the Gadsden flag, because that actually got leaked by Project Veritas earlier this week. Mm-hmm. And it's an FBI guide that went out to law enforcement agencies across the country, and its title was Militia Violent Extremism. And they gave their symbols that supposedly identify a person or a group as a militia or violent extremist. And one of the things I found very interesting is, in addition to the Betsy Ross flag and the Gadsden flag, a few of the other items that they said you should look for to identify these military violent extremists were the Punisher skull.
One of our founding symbols.
The two that were my favorite were a Spartan helmet and the words Molon Labe.
What's that? What's that mean?
So that is Greek for, loosely translated, it's come and take them. It's, if you've seen the movie 300, when the Spartans...
I think of the Spartans, yeah. What's
right, when the Spartans were...
The Scottish guys,
facing the huge Turkish army that overwhelmed them in numbers.
Persian Jim.
And they were told to lay down their swords and their shields.
Yeah.
And surrender. The response that they gave was Molon Labe, which literally translated as something like having come, then take them. But loosely translated, it's come and take them. But what I think is interesting about the Spartan helmet and that particular phrase is the Spartan helmet is the symbol that's on the patch of U.S. Special Operations Command.
Ooh,
and Molon Labe is actually the motto of U.S. Special Operations Command. So apparently, United States Special Operations Command is a violent extremist organization.
That's hysterical. How did you find that? Talk about cross purposes. The wackos of the FBI, KGB, that think that our founding symbols. You know, I'm surprised. And do they look for secret handshakes or passwords what are these conspiracy theorists look for that they think that anybody who actually, you know, believes in the founding of this country, the founding principles, you know, they look for people singing the Star Spangled Banner, you know, standing up. Is that a clue too? I mean, what else have they got? People actually read the Constitution?
They had the Punisher skull the Punisher skull was in there. That was interesting because there's at least one SEAL team that uses the Punisher skull in its patch that its sailors wear in combat, and there are multiple civilian police SWAT teams that use the Punisher skull as part of their uniform. So apparently the police are military violent extremists as well, according to the Justice Department.
That's hysterical. How about the V for Vendetta mask? Is that out there too? Because that's something I'd likely wear.
Yeah, that was actually not in their list of
Park is British.
The
British
for.
Secret police would, you know, Scotland Yard would probably have that as a symbol to watch out for. Seeing as it was set in London. let's think about this. Go ahead. I want to think about this for a minute because some of the most patriotic people in the world are our special forces people. The people that, and you do this too. You said, you know, as much, or if not, I know you believe this, that once you swore that oath to support and defend the Constitution with your life, that didn't end with the end of your military service. Didn't end with your police service. It's just not going to end. I mean, I know that. You know, I basically took the same oath, even though I haven't officially served in the armed forces. But the thing is, that's what they're really up against. They're up against people that have sworn allegiance to this country, to what it stands for, to the Constitution, to the principles of freedom, and to a republic, not a democracy, but a republic. And those that believe in government as God, as government as all-powerful, you know, when they talk about Trump being a threat to democracy, they're really talking about Trump being a threat to their power that they have illegitimately claimed. And so it makes sense in how I think they think that if you're an FBI KGB agent, that you believe in the power of the secret police and the government, and you believe in the state, that is your mafia. That is the ring that you kiss. That is your reason for existing. Your raison d'être, as they say in France, that the state is everything. That it makes sense that the people who believe in patriotism, who served to defend this country, are probably your enemy, ultimately, if you believe in the state as opposed to freedom. What do you think?
Oh yeah, and
oh good.
Just to show you how
I'm gonna roll there for a minute. Yeah,
but just to show you how broadly, you know, this communique, and that's what I'll call it because it sounds like something that would come out of the KGB. But to show you,
well,
just
that's why
how
I say
broadly,
FBI KGB. I mean, I say FBI KGB for a reason.
That's right. Just, to show you how broadly this went, a couple of the other symbols that supposedly identify you as a militia violent extremists is the use of 2A or the Second Amendment. So apparently the Second Amendment
to
the Constitution, mm-hmm. our Constitution, makes you an extremist if you have a reference to it. And the Revolutionary War Militiaman image makes you a violent extremist.
Which was my high school band emblem.
So apparently the New England Patriots are a violent extremist organization.
Well, so is Lexington High School, you know, where this all began. You know, and we proudly wore our Minuteman patches on our uniform. The football team was the Minutemen. Okay, it wasn't the Minute People. Okay, let's get Shirley in on this. Do you see these symbols anywhere? Do you have any militia symbols, Shirley? Are you a closet patriot there, or are you just like openly patriot like the rest of us?
And I'm going through my checklist, and I'm missing a couple. The Betsy Ross flag, I do not have that present anywhere. Everything else I've got covered, so I'm good.
I got that on my wall, actually. Actually, I have two flags on my wall. Maybe I should admit this. I had the Betsy Ross original 13 colony flag, and I had the Confederate battle flag. And I put those two on my wall.
I've got either patches, hats with all these or any of these symbols, you know, 2A, Second Amendment, that's all over the place.
Yeah,
I've got it all.
Yeah, I call my yin and yang flags. Yeah, those are my yin and yang flags. You've got freedom and slavery. You know, you've got Republicans and Democrats. You know, you have the Betsy Ross, the 13 colony flag, and the Confederate flag, and everything that, you know, the two sides of this country are represented, I think, on those two flags. So I put them together and I go, huh, interesting.
Well, my head goes off to Echo Company across the United States. They're doing a good job. And I detest the way the news media make mention of them being emboldened by Donald Trump and other leaders of the Republican Party.
Who's Echo Company?
Echo Company is a militia.
Oh, I'm not familiar.
It was in the news in California during the wildfires that they were going to provide some assistance to homeowners, and you had some people didn't want to have anything to do with them because of that they are malicious, I guess you could say.
It's interesting. People are more willing to trust the government that's trying to kill them than the militia that are trying to save them. People really screwed up in this country.
And, of course, the Southern Poverty Law Center has always got to give their narrative. You know, the same law center that told black preachers that they shouldn't let their congregations participate in the Million Man March. I don't understand it.
Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center is basically a Marxist front. It's a whole different organization. They're something else. I mean, all the things that stand for freedom. It's like the ACLU used to stand for freedom before they became the American Communist League. You know, but they actually were a really good organization for a while. Southern Poverty Law Center takes anything to do with freedom, anything to do with, Western values of that go back to Magna Carta. And those are the terrorists and those are the extremists. So let me ask both Jim and Shirley this question. If we're in a strange situation where the government is trying to put this propaganda forth that the extremists are those who believe in freedom and the right people are those that believe in basically slavery, what kind of crazy world are we in right now? Who wants that one?
That's an easy question. We're in the crazy world where Joe Biden could be our president.
I mean, not my president.
That says enough about how crazy our world is.
Yeah. Well, I post something you'll like on Facebook, and I said that, you know, how we have a recession defined as, you know, a period of prosperity and unparalleled growth. You know, I redefined administration as a stolen government run by an incompetent moron. That's the new definition of administration.
Well, the incompetent moron is the news media, like I was telling you. In downtown St. Louis, Washington, 20th Street, you have some black groups that's openly carrying, which nothing's wrong with. Mm-hmm. But they start shooting at each other. Well,
you guys know
if
about
you
that?
Look at the narrative that they imposed on Kyle Rittenhouse, and they demonized him, said he crossed state lines, I would guarantee you that some of those that was in this shootout came from over in Illinois, which was just blocks away from the bridge to cross over.
This provides a question for both Jim and Shirley, and that is, are these agent provocateurs, are they purposely trying to make gun owners look bad, that if people are actually carrying firearms, they're going to use them and start shooting up the streets? You know, that's something, if you were a government gun-grabbing person, you'd want to make gun owners look as bad as possible, especially with more constitutional carry states. That sounds like something that the government would hire people to do.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they called Kyle Rittenhouse a white supremacist. They said that if he had been black, he would have got shot and killed. Well, here's an instance just happened recently. Downtown St. Louis, around 20th and Washington Avenue, you had blacks shooting the whole damn street.
Did they kill anybody? Hopefully not, but were they shooting at people or just
stuff?
Two
people got shot. Two people got shot.
Well, let's go to Jim. Agent provocateurs, what do you think?
Oh, well, definitely. I mean, the left, with the help of the media, is definitely trying to demonize and vilify legal gun owners. They have been for years, and they, you know, they're getting better and better at how they do that. There was an article just this week in, I believe it was in Bearing Arms, that was talking about data that was released by an anti-gun group called the Violence Project. And it's a demonstration of how people can use accurate statistics to paint whatever picture they want. And their press release that they put out stated that it was talking about the increase in the number of people killed by mass shooters. And to their credit, they at least correctly identify the mass shooter as a mass shooting as being an instance where there were four or more victims of the shooting.
Because it's a three in Obama. Didn't Obama lower it to three and then they put it back again or something? I mean, it's still mass to me is like 20.
A lot of them will change the number around to get the number they want. So at least they used the correct definition. Mm-hmm. But they looked at 2 5-year periods. They looked at the 5-year period from 2017 to 2021. And the 5-year period that ended in 2016 mm-hmm. and showed that the number of people killed in mass shootings went up from 221 in the first 5-year period to 295. Mm-hmm. What they don't tell you is the significance of choosing those particular 5-year periods because 2017 was the year of the Las Vegas shooting.
Oh, yeah.
So you had 58 people killed in one instance in 2017. That's also when you had the Southern Spring shooting and a fair number of other mass shootings. So if you look at their numbers, 30% of their mass shootings actually occurred in just those two, Las Vegas and Southern Spring shootings. So if you choose the right 5-year period, you can tell whatever story you want.
Interesting.
Let's look at the 1-year period in Chicago, where you have 4,666 blacks shot by other blacks in a year's time, from Memorial Day 2021 to Memorial Day 2022. Do the math. You're talking about 12 up to 19 people being shot today, per day. Now, is that not a mass shooting?
Yeah, they'll call it individual events. That's all to get around it. It's only massive if it happens with one event. Shirley, let's get you back in here. DC Project, are you doing anything with these kind of stats or information?
No, but I totally agree. I mean, if they could put fear in people, then the anti-gun, anti-2A people are not going to have anything to dig their teeth into to get other folks on their side. So it's like a sanctioned political crime. They're out there, and if someone gets caught, if someone gets arrested, do they go to jail? Not for very long. Then they send them back out again, so they're going to do it again. So there's no real penalty. So it's like they're condoning this act of violence against other people, that's killing other people. So, no, I think there's a plan. There's a plan, and they're working hard at it. Because like I said earlier, in my high school, we never had any school shootings. We never, you never heard anything about it. But now it's like all these new shootings coming up every day. And then do they get caught? Yes. And then what do they say? All of a sudden, oh, they're out again.
That's the DA policy. That's the Soros district attorneys, which fortunately DeSantis fired one of them yesterday. The guy in Tampa. But back to Shirley's point, what do you think's changed between when you were in school and kids today?
What was the question?
Well, what's changed?
We kind of touched base with that. Electronics, communication, talking, being brought up by your parents, not by a computer or a iPhone or a TV. We were out, doing things.
So the kids are disconnected. Well, I think it's
that's the word you were using before. That's what you said. They need to disconnect. That was the word.
Okay. Oh, good. We figured it out. Sorry, Jim. We're just doing a little recapping here. we're a very transitory kind of place around here. Things just go from thing to thing. But if you take the lack of fathers, if you have what I think fame plays a huge part of this, the immortalizing on social media. If we would just stop covering these assassins, I mean, you can talk about them blankly, but don't show their pictures, talk about them very generally, if at all. And when they get to, jail, forget them completely. It's like you're going to be wiped from our memory banks. That might help a lot too, but it's all this other stuff. But they, you know, from video games and everything else, it's like so many factors going on here, but there's a complete lack of morals. There's a moral decline. We knew what right and wrong were, you know, and today it's a concept. It's a variable concept. It's a, however you define it. If it's wrong for you, then it's wrong. You know, we live in a world where teachers will tell kids, you know, to change their gender. You know, you're not a boy, even though you're born a boy, you're actually a girl. You know, I mean, this is very, very, I mean, kids have enough trouble. Kids have problems. They don't know what's going on. Pianchi?
Yeah, today you are at a state in this nation that education is just not going to do it. It's going to have to be grown out of it. In other words, you know, I hate to say this, well, you keep shooting up enough people, pretty soon won't be nobody to shoot. But you got a culture that's preeminent in certain areas, certain communities, certain neighborhoods. That culture begins at the home, where those components that's needed to prevent that thing, and like we like to talk how it once was, well, it goes to school, then it shows out in reactionary ways in the streets that we see all the time and want to blame the police for. So I don't see it being an education process. I think it's just going to have to grow away from it and wean itself off of it. And that's going to take a long time.
Yeah, they're arresting the gun owners and not the criminals. Well, Jim, you're in law enforcement. Have you seen changes that, I mean, how bad is it now compared to when you were serving?
It's definitely changed an awful lot. Not being in law enforcement anymore, it's really hard for me to say for sure because I'm not out there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be that you didn't have the type of criminal that you have today. You know, and when I was in law enforcement, it was just at the time that criminals were starting to be seen, at least in poorer neighborhoods, as somewhat of a hero. Being shown as, you know, the path to get yourself out of this situation of poverty. And it's amazing, you know, that we have gone from vilifying criminals to celebrating them in some parts of the country now.
Huh. Yeah, and rewarded. You know, you get rewarded. If you're a shoplifter and you break a bunch of glass cases in a jewelry store, it's okay, unless you steal a certain amount. You know, there are people are openly walking out of San Francisco. We've seen the videos.
The video. They show up at the jewelry stores in their pajama bottoms and house shoes, and they're taking their time to load up trash bags with jewelry.
Yeah, and people are filming them. People are putting them on cell phones. Well, look at this. So a robbery in place. Rather than, you know, bashing with something and holding them for the police. You know, Yeah, moral decline. People would rather take a picture of something happening that's evil than do something about something that's evil. That's a problem, too. There's a disconnect.
And, you know, it is totally dangerous for a white person to be in some of these areas. They are attacking them like a swarm of bees. Look at the poor white woman there in New Orleans who was trying to prevent her car from being hijacked. She was drugged until her arm was severed from her body.
I don't know about
this case. And these three black teenagers there, and I don't know what happened to them. Oh, if it was in Louisiana, they're probably going to face death penalty. But this is the thing. And then the poor white male, I mean, they get blamed for every damn thing. So police officers being shot, had police officers paralyzed from a shooting there in Chicago. Another female officer approaches a car, and the rear window of the passenger side rolls down, and they start shooting. It kills her. So that's what you got. And because of all this George Floyd's reaction and other things, and now people are beginning to realize, oh, my goodness, did we make a mistake? Well, it's too late.
And Pianchi, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I will say I am the first person out there who will call out law enforcement officers when they do something wrong. And I think that there actually is a problem in law enforcement in this country, mostly that bad cops are not called out by supposed good cops. You know, there is that blue wall of silence that is out there that, you know, is an unwritten rule that you don't report other police officers for what they've done wrong.
Oh, that's every company in the country. Every government agency is the same thing. That's why I have whistleblower laws. So I don't think it's unique to the police. It may be more obvious in certain cases, depending on the crime. But I think that's a condition everywhere. People are encouraged to go along, get along, don't report things. You look at the Justice Department. You look at any government entity that is spending ridiculous amounts of money. There's no look at the veterans. You know, we actually wrote a veterans whistleblower protection act that protects the veterans a whole lot better than the supposedly veterans whistleblower protection act. In fact, it actually made it worse for the whistleblowers. So there's a culture.
Yeah, the bigger problem I have, though, is, you know, in most of those places where you have people who aren't reporting it,
mm-hmm.
they don't have the authority over people that a law enforcement officer does.
No, that's a good point.
And, you know, one of the things that's really caused a huge problem in the United States is qualified immunity for law enforcement officers, which started off as a very good policy. And that was that if a police officer was acting consistent with his job and authority, he was immune from prosecution. Except in places where, you know, he committed an egregious violation of someone's constitutional rights. The courts have bastardized qualified immunity now to where almost anything that a police officer does, they are granted qualified immunity unless the person who is challenging their qualified immunity can show a previous court decision by an appellate or higher court that exact behavior has already been proven unconstitutional. And that's the only time that qualified immunity can be pierced. And to let you know how bad that's gotten, there was a case right at the end of the Supreme Court session this year. I think it was on the last day that they were in session. Where they refused to take a case, a qualified immunity case. And this was a case where a gentleman was at his home threatening suicide in front of his wife and family. He doused himself with gasoline and said he was going to set himself on fire. The police arrived on the scene and two police officers tased him. After having training that tasing someone who had flammable liquid on them could result in ignition and their death, and after one of the police officers on the scene told them not to tase him because they would likely set him on fire, they tased him. He was set on fire and died. The trial court originally denied qualified immunity. The appellate court actually reinstated the qualified immunity. And my favorite quote from the appellate decision is that the person attempting to pierce qualified immunity had not shown a clearly established constitutional right not to be tased and caused to burst into flames. That's a direct quote from the appellate court decision.
That's insane. That is truly insane. Yeah, this
well,
is...
Well, you know, here's another thing, too.
Qualified immunity used to be qualified. It's now it's like unqualified. It's like blanket immunity. It seems to be what you're saying, Jim.
Yeah,
it is.
Pelosi has it. Maxine Waters has it. When she emboldened people to go out and break the law and attack others, she has
that's
qualified
Democrat.
Immunity.
That's Democrat privilege immunity. That's a little bit different.
But here's the thing.
Yeah. Okay.
When you're a police officer and you are honest and you are actually straightforward with your job,
mm-hmm.
well, hell, if every time that you go to question or perform your job, the suspect is spitting on you. The suspect is reacting to you in a terrible negative manner. The suspect, when you go to handcuff them, they start hollering, "I can't breathe." The suspect, the things that they do, why come they are not, their charges are not leveled up when they perform an action that hinders them being put in a restraint or in custody? I mean, that's all over the board nowadays.
Yeah, there was, in fact, this case in New York where the suspects were actually freed by the crowd and the police were beaten up. It's like it's a very strange world. Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, don't get me wrong. I have no problem with law enforcement officers using force. I have a problem with law enforcement officers abusing the power that they have and blatantly abusing it and being allowed to do so by the courts. You know, you talk about the fact that police officers are treated that way. I can tell you when I was a law enforcement officer in Virginia, the Virginia courts had decided that the law that we had on the books, which was assaulting a police officer, was unconstitutional, that you couldn't have any special charge or enhanced charge for assaulting someone simply because they were a law enforcement officer. And so what we would do to get around that is you would charge them with simple assault and then just make sure that you wore your uniform when you went into court to testify so that the jury could see that you were a law enforcement officer.
Oh, that's funny. How about resisting arrest? Would that be an enhancement?
No, resisting arrest was fine. Their problem was having an enhanced charge for assaulting someone strictly because they were a law enforcement officer. And I'm not sure if that's
the course of an arrest, or was this just in general?
The law was written in general, but you know, you were never charged with it unless you did it in the course of an arrest.
Yeah. See, I don't want special privileges. Like, you know, we have exemptions for firearms laws that, you know, citizens can't get in certain places, like in California, you can't get a carry permit at all. It's a May issue place. Well, at least it was. But they exempted veterans and police officers. So, like, you can't do that. That's anti-14th Amendment. It's against equal protection. You can't give special privilege to people, you know, because of government service, which is usually what it turned out to be. Pianki, you had a point. And let's get Shirley back in, too. Pianki?
Well, let's bring Shirley back in. I'll hold my point.
Yeah, Shirley, don't let us monopolize. You know, feel free. Just jump right in the conversation here.
Oh, no.
Be brave.
No,
be bold.
Everything was made some good points, and I think what is happening is we're not, as I say, we're not backing the blue anymore. All of a sudden, you have, of course, you have those bad apples. Everybody does, but the good ones out there, I mean, I don't blame them for second guessing a movement. Oh, will I get prosecuted? Will I get thrown in jail? Do I have to, you know? They're so concerned with that they might not react as quickly, and also that could put them in danger. And the fact that we don't back them anymore, then this group of people that wants to rebel, all they want to do is take pictures and find things that they're doing wrong. And like Bianchi said, they get beat up more than the suspect did. You know, they cheer when the suspect gets released, and then they beat up the police. And it's a lack of respect. And I think that goes all back to our morals. When I was brought up, you respected law enforcement. That's just, there was no question about it.
Yeah, it has to go two ways, though. You know, in other words, you give some respect when they give you respect. In other words, law enforcement, you know, gets respect by being good, honorable, decent public servants.
Right. I think the majority of them are. It's the minority that are the bad apples getting publicity and all that. But majority of them are good. They're respectable. They understand their job, and they take pride in it. No.
And I would agree with Shirley definitely on that. I mean, the law enforcement officers that I've met are overwhelmingly doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very, very small number. My concern is the courts and the departments protecting that very, very small number rather than driving them out as they should.
Well, is there a thin government line? Is there like a government line that judges protect the police protect the judges, because they're both government people? It's like a separation of government from us private citizens. That's where I see the real split is, and I think that's why that qualified immunity became basically blanket.
Yeah, and it could be. I mean, I can tell you just from what I've seen in the appellate courts in Florida, it is very, very difficult to get a judgment against a government entity in Florida. The courts will bend over backwards to try to justify a way to rule in favor of a government entity if there's any way for them to do so.
Yeah. What about this corrupt DA, this Soros DA in Tampa, that refused to enforce pro-life provisions, refused to said that all lockdowns were constitutional and clearly they weren't, that was doing everything wrong and basically, you know, enforcing the laws he felt like enforcing and ignoring the ones he didn't. And he was protected. He's been there 6 years already.
There's at least two things going on with that guy. One, he has a mental condition. Two, whatever Jim want to call it.
Let's find out, Jim, and then Shirley.
I'm not sure the whatever Jim wants to call it was. So.
I know you got a good reason, but the judge has got a mental problem, and he needs to be brought up on that problem that he has. Anyone in that capacity that can read and they come up with an interpretation like he just put out there, is something wrong with him mentally.
Yeah, the big problem I have, and people have made some really bad false equivalencies on that who have tried to justify this guy. And he wasn't a judge. He was a state's attorney in Tampa that got removed. And he got removed for refusing to prosecute certain crimes. And people have tried to make a false equivalency to, you know, a governor or a legislator saying that they shouldn't prosecute crimes. The difference is the governor and the legislator are elected officials who are allowed to make some of those discretionary decisions and to make those statements. When you're a state's attorney, you are a public servant who's a member of the executive branch, and you are required to do what the law requires you to do. So if there's a case to be made, you are required to prosecute it. There's some discretion, but there's not a blanket discretion to say, I will never prosecute this case, whatever it is,
or this
it just doesn't exist.
Yeah. I've got Derek on the line. We're going to talk money here. And of course, everybody's welcome to stick around for that. There's so much going on in the economy, but let's get contact information for Shirley and Jim, just in case you folks have to, or when you do have to drop, I want to make sure we get that first. So Shirley, why don't you go ahead and then Jim, and then we'll get to Derek.
Okay. If you want to get involved with the DC project, whether maybe a donation or join us in our fight to preserve the Second Amendment, you can go to dcproject.info. If you like to contact me directly, you can also go through there, or you can email me at dcpflstatedirector@gmail.com. And this is Shirley reporting for Action Radio, DC Project, Women and Gun Rights.
She's so good at that now. Jim.
Okay, I will pale in comparison to Shirley, but that is always the case, and I'm okay
Aww.
With that. So I'm Jim Dykes with Florida Carry. You can find us on the web at floridacarry.org. You can reach me directly at jim@floridacarry.org by my email. And as always, Greg, it's great to be on Talking Guns with you and Shirley and Pianchi and, you know, our little tribe for Friday.
Yeah, I love it too. This is why I love, you know, I'm getting up early for you guys, and it's worth it because this is such a great group. Like I say, if you're welcome to stick around, and we're going to talk to Derek about money, and let's get his theme. And of course, I love having you guys on. I mean, I just do it. It's just too much fun.
You know, I got one more thing.
Oh, wait a minute.
Great.
Too late. Money. What is it? How does it work? How do you get it to work for you? So many choices. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, commodities, and then there are the markets.
oil, gold, manufacturing, trade, energy, even government? To make sense of all the places your money can go, Derek Park of Edward Jones Financial Advisors joins us Fridays at this time to make sense of the markets and your money.
All right, let's get Pianki's point real quick, then we'll go to Derek. Pianki?
Well, the thing I was going to say is like these judges and prosecutors, is when they are being confirmed, they talk about how well they're going to uphold the law and how they're going to prosecute crime. But they don't when they're elected. Well, is that not the same thing that you see the pro-abortionists say about the Supreme Court's confirmation proceedings, that Kavanaugh lied, and so on and so on? See, conservatives got to stop letting themselves be confined in one little on a particular subject. There's many examples that can go on and be used with these progressives and liberals, the way they use things. They do the same thing that you accuse you of doing.
Yeah, it's called projection, yeah. You got a good point there, but the conservatives are a bunch of weenies. They don't fight back. They're a bunch of cowards, and I don't have much hope for the midterms. Let's get the money, though, because I want to talk to Derek. And we have, I don't know how much time he has. We don't have, Amber's missing, too, so we're not confined by the top of the hour, but you always have things to do. So, Derek, you know, let's get some general impressions. We'll get to the, report, and, gee, there's an inflation bill that's not going to stop inflation. What a surprise. I'm shocked. That's what I am, shocked. Good morning, Derek.
How about poor gas on the fire? Yeah,
exactly.
That's
let's have
crazy,
more inflation.
You know?
More spending.
Yeah.
We'll have more spending. We'll stop inflation with more spending. You know, it's like they're redefining everything.
They may give it a minute to get under control, and then they'll just turn the presses back on. You know, that won't cause any problems either.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Ahead and read the report, and we'll let it let the questions ensue. But good morning, everybody. This is Derek Park with Ever Jones, bringing you the daily financial market report. Markets closed mixed today. The S&P 500 moved modestly lower, while the NASDAQ closed higher after rebounding nearly 15% this quarter already. This comes as oil prices continue to head lower, with WTI crude moving lower than $90 for the first time since the Ukraine crisis began. Yields move lower once again as well, with the benchmark 10-year Treasury yield down to 2.66% level. The yield curve is the difference between the 10-year and 2-year, remained inverted about 36 basis points, close to lows for this year. An inverted yield curve can be a leading signal for recessionary conditions ahead, although there is usually a lead time of about 6 to 18 months before the economic downturn begins.
Yeah, we're already there. We were there months ago.
U.S. equity closed lower today, with the Dow Jones down 86 points, or 0.26, to 32,727. NASDAQ closed up 52 points, or 0.41, to 12,721. And the S&P 500 closed down 3 points, or 0.1, to 41,52. Again, in the bond market, 10-year Treasury yield trading at 2.66%. Commodity markets, the price of crude oil was down $2.36, or 2.6% to $88.30, and the spot price of gold was up $34.90, or 1.96% to $18.1130. This is Derek Park of Over Jones, member SIPC. You can get me at 850-995-0082.
Wow, oil's down, gold's up. How do you account for that price? $88 a barrel? How'd that happen? That's great.
So typically, if we are in recessionary times, oil does lose value, because technically, people are leaving things on the shelves. The economy is in contraction. So typically they go hand in hand. So that would be the economic explanation of it. According to the current administration, there was another release on the strategic oil reserve. So that may have had a minor impact in what was going on.
Yeah, this is wondering how much impact, because not only are they releasing it to us, they're releasing it to the rest of the world, you know, to stabilize the world price. Well, you don't release our emergency supply to do that. First of all, that's criminal. I'm surprised there isn't a law against that. There aren't guidelines for when it gets released. But the other thing is, well, let me ask another question. Did the price of oil before the Ukraine war started, that would be an interesting benchmark. Do you know about what that was?
I can go look. Hold on a second.
So that would have been, 3 months ago? 4 months ago?
I'd be looking right around February, I think is what it was. Hold on, let me.
Okay. I'm trying to take Ukraine out of the equation. Is what I'm trying to figure. And if Ukraine,
I probably look at January. You'd probably be safe.
Yeah.
I look at their crude oil. There it is. Okay. Let's go back 6 months. Just a little bit lower. You'd be talking 83. They call it 82, between 82 and $83 a barrel.
So that's close enough. So in other words, we've returned to a pre-Ukraine level. So either the market stabilized or other sources, things are going on. So Ukraine's really out of the picture now.
January 1st, it was $73 a barrel. December 31st, January 1st, it was 72.82. And, you know, it kind of slowly crept up into February, and then obviously March it spiked.
Well, it makes sense because as workers back to work, as people started making money, as the economy was finally coming out of lockdowns and things like that, the, you know, whatever improvements there were, slow they were because we had Brandon in office, it makes sense the price of oil go up because the demand would still be going up. But once, you know, Ukraine and everything else hit and the recession started to really kick in, which was basically 6 months ago, so January, you know, the our first quarter of decline, it would make sense that the demand would have dropped. And now that's having an effect on the market. The price is dropping back down again, and it is heading lower. So this makes sense. So these $3, what's the price around? $3.60, $3.70 a gallon around here right now? Maybe $3.80?
Yeah, that's probably close, yeah.
So that's not a fluke. That's not a reduction spike in demand. That's actually,
no.
this could last a while at this because the overall price has gone from, what, $1.10 a barrel down to $88? Which is huge.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if it continues to decline, I mean, you know, I mean, I told you that the threshold for people being comfortable is around $80 a barrel. So if we were to stay that, I mean, that's a meism. That's not a statistical fact or anything. I mean, I'm just saying from economy basis.
That makes sense.
You know, but once it gets to that point, you know, I mean, obviously, are you really hearing anybody complain about gas prices anymore? No. You know what I mean? That kind of went away.
Well,
I mean, it should, you know what I mean? Like, you know, nobody wants to pay $4.50 a gallon for gas. I mean, I get it. You know, the rest of the world complains that we're way behind the times because of our consumption. We should be paying more, you know, so that's arguable.
Because if you consume more, you should pay less. Economies of scale. If we have more people buying gas, the unit price should be lower.
Right. But it's also based on production and we're not producing. So. You know,
that's a different problem. That's a supply problem.
It is a problem.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
But where we are right now, I mean, obviously we're seeing the economy kind of go sideways. I mean, we do have a shrinking economy because we're not producing GDP. You know, so that might probably perpetuate through the next quarter. You know, it might be Christmas time before we start seeing any kind of good turnaround.
Well, at least the price of oil is down a bit, so that's not going to contribute to price inflation, which is different than, you know, borrowing and printing money inflation, which is the real cause here. So this should be interesting. But they're still cranking up this bill again. They're still spending money. They're still doing everything wrong. You know, it's like we're accommodating, and
luck,
then they're screwing it up again. Go ahead.
If we've got any luck, maybe it doesn't make it through the Senate. I mean, just like this. You know, Second Amendment weapons bill they got. Did Jim talk about that? I missed that.
No, not this time.
Yeah.
What's the latest one?
They jammed that thing through like 6 days ago. They jammed that thing through, you know, that basically any weapon that has any magazine beyond 10 rounds, any weapon that's auto-feeding, any weapon that pretty much any type of AR weapon or any kind of modern tactical type weapon banned. Now that doesn't mean you can't have them, but they're stopping the sales of them.
And did this pass and was signed into law?
It passed the House. It didn't had to make it past the Senate yet. You know.
Yeah.
It,
no.
It,
see.
It
yeah.
The
that's.
House
well,
by,
is that on? Is that unconstitutional? Well, if the states say go to hell, federal government, it's unconstitutional.
Yeah, people don't understand how to use the Constitution.
We had it before back under, I believe it was Obama. You know, we had it for
Clinton.
10 years.
Yeah, it was
Clinton.
Yeah. And it was unconstitutional then, too. So we've got an unconstitutional precedent where it was not ruled unconstitutional. It should have been ruled unconstitutional the day it was passed.
Right.
But it wasn't. Yeah. But the Senate is a little different. you know, the Senate's got a filibuster. You know, they still, you know, although they're doing the budget bill under reconciliation, which I think is a huge mistake because it's not. That's how they're going to pass this climate change, you know, pork barrel thing through. But the gun bill, I don't think the Senate's going to do it, especially in the election year, especially because they'll need 60 votes. They're not going to get 60 votes to pass this.
Well, here's the thing on all these cases like this. Until people start telling their states to tell the federal government that we're not going to do it, it becomes just unconstitutional. There's nothing the federal government can do. There's nothing. Somebody tell me what can they do. What are they going to do, send a truck full of IRS agents and FBI to lock up everybody in the state? They don't have that power.
It's interesting you talk about all those agents coming in. You know, I have a government disarmament bill for their unconstitutionally armed agents. 200,000 armed bureaucrats. I want to stay off that, though. I want to get on to more of the financial stuff because this is the only chance we have all week to talk about it. I think the danger, Derek, is that people will become comfortable with $3.80 gasoline and not go, not scream and yell and go, wait a minute, we had $1.85 gas. Why do I have to put up with $3.85? That's $2 more a gallon. That's $2 that I could be putting to anything else I want to put it towards, even if it's like, you know, beer on a Saturday night. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, it's taking money away. It's taking away our discretionary income. And I read this somewhere that people get this, like what I call the price point or something. They sort of accommodate. They work around it if it sticks around long enough. And that's a mistake.
Yeah,
so I think government counts on that.
That's the plan, Greg. I mean, you know, the bottom line is, the administration said, hey, I want gas cars to go away. And, you know, I mean, they're going to do it at the cost of the American public. You know, I mean, they're not going to do it in any slow, mythological way. You know, they're going to do it as hardcore, you know, to the punch. And, I mean, he's made that adamantly clear. You know, I mean, now when, you know, the American public started crying a little bit saying, hey, dude, what are you doing over here? You know, hey, okay, I'll release strategic oil reserve, but we'll give a little bit to China and other countries too. You know, hey, okay, we'll do this again. Well, I mean, it's fine. Sure, at least he's trying to solve the problem. I mean, you know, I'll give him a little bit of credit.
Well, it's not fine. That's giving away our national security, as far as I'm concerned.
I totally agree with you, but I mean, at least it's addressing the problem, you know. So, I'm not a pessimist, you know. So we're getting a little bit of movement, but the bottom line is, like I said, they want these to go away. You've got companies that are producing electric cars at an astronomical rate. Well, what is that going to do to the electric power grid when we throw another 10 million cars on the on the power grid having a charge?
It's monopolization
anybody...
of energy, I call it. In other words, single source energy. You know, if diversity is our strength, then we should have diverse power. We should have oil, natural gas, coal, uranium, geothermal, wind, solar, whatever's appropriate. You know, solar might be really appropriate if you're in Phoenix. You know, it could probably heat and cool your house really efficiently. Okay, if you're in Alaska in the wintertime, not so much. You know, so people, you have to have the freedom of energy. In fact, we actually wrote this into our Australian Bill of Rights, that part of it is freedom of energy choice. You know, if the only source of energy is the government, we're screwed. Electric power is very dangerous because it comes from publicly regulated utilities. Well, I'm curious about the utility stock. Is that going up right now?
It is, typically. You're talking about recessionary times, utilities and consumer staples tend to do very well. Like your Procter and Gamble, your NextEra, that's a utility company here, Duke, you know, which is a huge conglomerate. Yes, utility companies become extremely valuable.
Yes, yeah, it worries me though, because if in California, they're already telling people you can't charge your electric car. So they're forcing people into a transportation system that people are not able to use because the government takes it away. Those smart meters, you know, those aren't for reading for electricity. They're for metering electricity. They're for the government determining who gets power and who doesn't. You know, what if you have a Republican district that the Democrat governor objects to? You know, you don't think that can happen?
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can't give power to government over all our energy because energy is freedom. You know, that's the whole point of gasoline. You can buy as much gasoline as you can afford. Government doesn't tell you how much you can buy. You can go anywhere you want. You can get as big a vehicle as you want. You can make it as inefficient as possible. You can put on as many weird things, you know, jack up the pickup trucks, you know, 16 feet off the ground. Who cares? It's America. But if the power companies control it, You know, you're going to want to have the smallest, least, you know, most efficient, tiniest little electric vehicle. We'll all be driving around electric smart cars with the batteries, you know, taking up most of the space, taking up the seat beside you. You know, so it's when the government controls the economy. Well, actually, I'll say something interesting. I wrote a creative car act because cars are boring. You look at the cars out there, they all pretty much look the same. They don't have color anymore. Last time cars had color was the 70s. You know, 50s, 60s, and 70s, cars were beautiful. Reds were red. Greens were green. You know, whites were white. Now it's like this subdued, boring thing. They're all supposedly aerodynamic. They all look about the same. There's nothing original about them because they're all government controlled. You know, name a classic car from 2020. Name one classic car from 2020. There isn't
one. What do you mean classic?
Well, name a car that was made in the last 5 years that's destined to be a classic.
Oh, last 5 years, the FJ Cruiser, Toyota.
Okay, you think?
Yeah.
I don't know what an FJ Cruiser is.
They stopped producing it. They stopped producing it. It looked like a Jeep. It was designed to compete with the Jeep. Very
that
popular,
round thing?
Very reliable.
Yeah, those were kind of cool.
Yeah, see? I got you.
Good for you. Why'd they stop producing it? Well, that's the whole lot you're supposed to get me. Why'd they stop producing it?
I don't know the answer to that. I really don't. I'd have to look it. But, if you look up FJ Cruiser Toyota, you know, I think they stopped producing it in, like, 18, maybe 17.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very, very, very sought after, growing in value. There's another one, the original Toyota Land Cruiser. They are going to bring it back, but they're bringing it back in a different capacity. And that one, if the vehicle's value was like $80,000 when you bought it, they're selling them for like $120,000 and getting it because they're not producing that style anymore.
I remember that car. That was a cool car. All right. So actually you proved my point. Prove the point that the cars that are original, the cars that are different, or the pickup trucks that are different are going to be the ones that are the classics, or the ones that are desirable. People want interesting vehicles. All right. And so what I'm saying with the Creative Car Act is that we take away the government, some of these ridiculous standards where the government regulates everything from the aerodynamic quotients to the fuel economy to everything else. If someone wants a car that gets 3 miles to the gallon, you know, with a 14-cylinder engine, I don't care. Go for it.
Mm-hmm.
There's
no laws that says you can't make it. I mean, who's just going to buy it? You're producing something for a very specific market. I mean, hence the the Bugatti Chiron or whatever, or even the Veyron. I mean, that thing has a 16-cylinder engine.
I love it. Well, if you can afford it, but that's the thing, too. That's the market determining rather than the government determining. I don't care what the market determines. That's where the way it's supposed to work. Okay? Not everybody can afford the Bugattis. Yeah. Pianchi, go ahead.
That is the way it's supposed to work. The government shouldn't be subsidizing of these ideas that's going to disrupt and put a lot of people out of work like they're trying to do with electrical vehicles. So if people want to buy them, let them buy them. But the government shouldn't be sponsoring it.
We should have to pay someone else. And, you know, the irony is that those electric vehicles are powered by coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear power, ultimately. Because that's what makes electricity.
Why come the government don't sponsor growing trees?
Okay, one at a time.
Let's replant trees in the Sahara Desert there in Africa.
So what are you saying, Derek?
I said if you break it all down to the nitty-gritty, that's absolutely true. Like they're all powered by coal, nuclear. I mean, I think even Elon Musk said he said, you know, hey, while we produce electric cars, you have to understand that right now until we have more, it's very much more costly to produce these electric cars than it is gasoline cars. Even he said it, you know, I mean, so he, you know, I mean, the guy's a pretty brilliant scientist, you know, so, I mean, I'm not saying I take everything he says word of bond, but, you know, I mean, he's got a point there. He's been the forefront of production of electric vehicles forever.
Mm-hmm. No, he knows them. And if people want to buy them, I have no problem with people buying electric vehicles. I have problems with the government subsidizing electric vehicles and skewing the market, because then we don't have a free market. You know, we have a government market. And especially when the government is directing people to, you know, from government-approved electric cars to government power to power those electric cars, to regulating how much power you have for your electric car because the government has all the coal, oil, and natural gas going to power plants. This is insane. So how much subsidy are they getting, and what do you think the electric car market would be doing without any subsidies?
I'm not sure, to be quite honest, but I know they get like certain, if you buy these ones that have complete electric, mm-hmm. you know, you pay that higher price from it and then you get a reimbursement on your taxes.
Hmm. How about hybrids? Are they still viable in the market? I don't hear much about hybrids anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The new Toyota Sequoia is supposed to be a hybrid.
See, that to me is the perfect vehicle.
That's the
because
same
in town,
thing,
yeah, in town you want your hybrid to shut down. You want to be able to use the hills and stoplights and braking effect to charge your battery in a hybrid. But you don't want to be solely electric because then you've got that massive battery. You don't need a massive battery with a hybrid because it's got a small gasoline engine or diesel engine or however they
right.
power them. So hybrids to me seem
yeah.
to make the most sense of any vehicle.
Yeah, I would say.
That's the same thing that was done with the solar panels on your house.
Right.
Federal and local government was giving these tax breaks up to 40%, I think, at one point in time. But when everything expired, the usage of solar panels on homes have not increased appreciably at all because of the cost still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I shouldn't
well,
have to pay to subsidize.
Power companies,
yeah.
mm-hmm. The power companies did too, was they keep limiting what they have to buy back from you, so they keep making money because solar's growing. They did this in California so much that one county, it was almost useless for them to have solar power because they were getting bills that were just as big as if they didn't have it.
How did that work? How are they getting power bills?
The power company basically said, okay, we're not buying any power back from you. You know, so you're only producing, you know, whatever it is that you're getting. And then, oh, by the way, we're going to increase the base charge for anybody that's not producing a certain amount or not
that's
using a certain
funny.
Amount.
That's
yeah.
like
you can Google this stuff. I'm sure you're going to come up with it because I read the article, so I'm sure there's plenty there.
Oh no, this is fascinating. And you know what else is funny is when California, when they said Californians, you have to conserve gasoline, you have to conserve water, and so people did, right? Because they're good Californians. Well, the government then raised the sales tax on gasoline and water, and raised the rates on water because people were conserving so much, the government wasn't making the money, so
yeah.
they raised the taxes to cover their losses from people conserving. Fascinating. Yeah. I don't know if this study's ever been done, but the CO2, if we get rid of, you know, carbon dioxide, the plants are going to suffer horribly. You know, so it's part of our food shortage problem is this obsession with CO2, which is plant food. And has anybody documented how much, you know, agriculture we'd lose if these wackos with their Green New Deal actually had a Green New Deal that killed all the green plants?
I mean, it could. I mean, it breeds well.
I'm just curious. You know, I just ask the questions to see what's out there. Because I don't want to know what the market people are thinking of. This is why I'm curious to ask these very general, very theoretical questions.
I saw articles when the Green New Deal first came out that economists were saying, "Hey, this is not a good idea."
Mm-hmm.
You know, economically, environmentally, I mean, anything. But ever since then, I've kind of seen it go away. I mean, so I, to be honest, I haven't seen anything.
Which leads to a question. Like price point, do people become accustomed to 380 gasoline and think, oh, so great, I'm not paying $4.50 anymore. This is wonderful, when they used to pay $1.85. You know, the CO2 situation, it's like, you know, the price of stuff goes up and they think, well, you know, we're reducing our CO2, we're breathing healthier, even though food's more expensive because you can't grow as many plants. You know, or do people get used to new food? I mean, they want to see any bugs now. I mean, there's some really strange things that people, they accommodate, you know, whereas people used to object to drug tests, now it's accepted. People used to object to all kinds of subsidies, and now they're accepted. They're getting used to electric cars. So the government, I guess they have this philosophy, they just wear people down long enough, they forget, and they gradually become accustomed to whatever the government people want to do. And part of that is adjusting to an electric car market, you know, when they're far more expensive than gasoline cars, and you get far less control over where you can go.
Well, I mean, I would say, I mean, as somebody that does budgets on a regular, you know, as I sit down with people
mm-hmm.
and they complain about prices, and, you know, I mean, I do the whole budget with them, you know, and I find out what's you know, disposable And then I start saying, hey, we need to increase 401ks. We need to increase this if you want to meet this retirement goal. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Even though gas is up, I mean, I would say the majority of people would sacrifice other places to keep them going and doing things that maybe they don't need to do. I mean, like food costs up, people still go eat out, right? Even though financially they probably shouldn't make that decision. And I'm not telling people they need to bottle up and not do anything, but, you know, I mean, if for that need to be a little bit more budget conscious, I'll tell you they don't. I mean, they'll stop contributing to investments. They'll stop contributing to life insurance. You know, they'll make these decisions that are extremely costly in the long run in order to fill their immediate desires. And, I mean, I'll tell you, I think it's a societal problem. You know, I mean, I, you know, I can stress that to people and, you know, nobody wants anything, any of these things until it becomes a problem. You know, I mean, it's sad. It's sad to see. I understand it, but I'm not saying I agree with it.
Hmm. Are people regretting selling all the stuff they sold earlier? I'm gonna get to Bianchi's question.
What's that?
Are people regretting all the things they sold in a panic, maybe in the last few months?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I mean, I've had plenty of folks that I've had to talk off the ledge, come back and be like, "Whoo, boy, am I glad you did that." You know, I mean, it's the market over the past few weeks, I mean, call it the past month, has recovered almost 10%.
So, well, what was the high? What's been the market high, the all-time high so far? 31.
Was back in November, December. You're talking about like points?
Yeah.
Like where was the Dow?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that off the top of my head, but
well, the highest. What's the highest you remember? I'm just kind of curious where it is now. It's like 32.7 something now. Has it been
it
as high as
November? The highest for the Dow was 36.952.
Okay, so that's not that far below it. It's 4,000 points, which these days is, I mean, it's below it. Yeah, and when was that? Was that when Trump was still in office, or what?
No. That was November last year.
Well, that's interesting. So after Brandon's inflation hadn't really kicked in yet, you know. And
it had probably started taking hold. I'm going to say probably right about when he took over. And I mean, you have to keep in mind. I mean, and I say this, even if Trump would have taken office, he would have seen it. You know what I mean? It's just what reactions would you have had to it? Would
COVID
have been nearly as bad? No, because he is not hard on oil, you know, so oil would have stayed down, but we probably would have seen inflation still spike. Would it have been 9%? Probably not. Probably would have been somewhere around 7%, but he would have had to seen it because he was part of sending out all the free money, right?
Yep.
You know,
yep.
So
that was his mistake.
You know, for anybody to say, no, he wouldn't have seen it would be foolish and doesn't understand economics.
Well, you know, how about the economics, Derek? In California, you got a preponderance of professionals in the STEM fields, engineering and so on, and they make six figures. But at the same time, you got some of the highest taxes leveled against income, the highest costs for food and also home and residency, it just eats that advantage up.
So what's your question?
Well, that's the way it usually works. When you have ideas that help to keep people's money in their pocket where they're not going to taxes and so forth, or if you have people that go out and work hard, study hard, and do the hard things in order to qualify for the high-paying wage and salary jobs, these governments figure out a way to take it away from them.
I mean, that's true. But, you know, I mean, people don't always have to stay in California, hence the big move to Texas. You know, I mean, there's people from California moving to Florida. I mean, they're
me.
You know, when the state gets out of
I
control,
did.
I mean, how about New York? New York is the same. I mean, I saw an influx of people coming from New York, New Jersey. You know, so eventually people get tired of it. You know, they don't want to pay those higher taxes. I agree. But, you know, they also love where they live, you know, so that's a sacrifice that they're willing to make. Do you want to pay those higher taxes? Do you want to live in California where the gun laws are more strict? You know, people have different attitudes on different things. You know, I mean, if that's your people, man, I mean, so be it. I mean, that's what makes our country great and free. You have the chance to go do that. But, you know, ultimately, if you want to live in these areas, you also pay the price.
Miyake? Okay. I see
keeping
gold.
My money in my pocket.
So gold is up.
Yeah.
Is that a recessionary hedge of people putting their money into gold to kind of hang on to it, hoping it won't lose as much value?
Yeah, typically that's what people do. You know, gold, you know, typically is an inflationary and a recessionary hedge. Unfortunately, gold, you know, for the past, call it 6 months, has really not done much and kind of lost value. You know, if you're looking at it, right? So its high was back in March at, well, I'm looking at gold shares. I don't know what the gold was per, I'd have to go look at the index, but, you know, its peak was probably about 18, almost 1900 per share or per ounce. And, you know, it went down to like 1700, you
yeah,
know,
I remember.
So,
had I
yeah,
money.
So dig in.
I said, had I money, I would, you know, it'd be nice to have a couple of gold coins, just, you know, just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Diversifying
couple
my portfolio.
Yeah. Few weeks
I like
ago.
Gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So gold actually today seems to be losing value as well. So it's done after hours trading, even after the report I just gave, and it's down another 1.2%, another $20 down. So it's back down to 1785 from 1806. So it's even changed, but if you go back 6 months, I'm sorry, the high was 2091 and the low was 1696. So you're talking about $400 spread, you know,
wow,
on gold. Gold is supposed to be doing you good. Now gold is back up on the rise. You know, but you know, it did the same thing back, we didn't have a recession, but we got close in, I'm wanting to say 2014. You know, where we were scratching the surface of it, and gold shot up and then like significantly lost value, and everybody panicked and went to gold. They said it was like one of the biggest, or they called it the fool's gold rush, because it was like everybody ran. I mean, that's what happens, Greg. You know, I mean, I've had clients do it now, you know, I mean, they're just like, you know, I want to go ahead and load up on gold. And I'm like, okay, gold, you know, while it is a hedge and it is these things, you shouldn't load up on it. It should be less than 5% of your holdings because it's considered an aggressive, right?
Right.
You know, and it if you compare it to the S&P 500 over certain periods of time, you know, if you take gold from like back to the beginning of time, yeah, it's going to beat the brakes off the S&P 500. But I'm talking about if you take it like last 30 years, last 50 years, last 60 years, I mean, the S&P 500 has dividends and compounding, right? You know, take the Dow, for example. You know, I mean, the S&P 500 didn't exist back then, but even if you take the Dow, the compounding and the growth you got off of it was tenfold of gold, right? Gold, you're buying it explicitly for share price, right? I'm going to buy it at $1,800 an ounce. I'm going to sell it at $2,000 an ounce. Well, what people don't realize when you buy it, yeah, you pay the market price. When you sell it, you lose 10%, you know, because whoever you're going to sell it to, you know, if you're buying physical gold, has got to have a profit margin, right?
Right.
You know, so nobody really considers that. They're just like, well, I'm just never going to get rid of it. But then why have it? You know what I mean? Like,
well, I think the best reason to have gold is because you like gold, you know, because it's pretty. You know, I mean, that's as good a reason as any, I think. You know, having a gold coin is kind of cool, you know. Get a Kruger Rand if you're really feeling crazy. Get a Canadian maple leaf and get an American eagle. That's three coins.
Kruger Rand. Isn't that South America, Krugerrand?
South Africa, yeah.
Yeah, South Africa. It's not South Africa.
Yeah, you couldn't own them for a while when there was apartheid going on, but I think you can own them now. They're actually rose-colored. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I got a question. Let's in whatever time you have left, recession. I made the point, and you made the point. I posted on Facebook and answered one of your comments that when people say, well, two quarters, you know, of negative growth starts a recession. I'm like, well, wait a minute. If you've got two quarters of negative GDP, you're already in a recession. The fact negative growth is a recession. So we've actually had one for 6 months, and people don't get that.
As I've said before, it's a lagging indicator. You know, so, I mean, by the time we start announcing it, we've been in it, right? What the what the public is, or I don't want to say what the public, what people are covering up for the definition of recession into looking to is there's a couple other things that come with recession. One, high unemployment, right? Okay, well, with people laying off people right now, I mean, Google just said they're laying off 20% of their workforce. Amazon said they're laying off 20% of their workforce. All your other tech companies are kind of right behind them. Your Coinbase, I just saw that one's going to lay off like 20%. Okay, so your unemployment number is coming, right? You know, I mean, all these people are reducing their workforces because, you know, they're feeling the contraction. I mean, I don't know if you watch TV, but have you noticed all the automobile companies are starting to run deals again?
I haven't, but that's a good point. Yeah. I'll take a look. Now, are they running lower priced automobiles?
For Ford, you know,
are they lower?
What's that?
Are they advertising more bargain price, or are they still going for their souped up pickups?
Bargain price, you know. So it said, hey, we're offering incentives on these vehicles, right? So what that means is that they're getting slower production, right?
Mm-hmm.
It means, or slower sales is what I meant. I'm sorry. Production is obviously up, and they're not moving the product. That means they got to discount them, or they're not going to get them off the lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so now you're starting to see the contraction take hold. I mean, the CEO of Kroger or Publix, one of the two, was basically saying, hey, they're having to start discount items, right? Walmart said the same thing.
I'm seeing BOGOs in Publix and Winn-Dixie. Those are two big markets down here in the South. And it's fascinating. BOGO is, you know, buy one, get one. For those that aren't familiar with the term, and I, you know, I wasn't for a while. But yeah, and I'm looking at myself, I go, wait a minute, there's shortages of food. There's trucking, you know, there's expenses to get this stuff here. You know, I remember when toilet paper and paper towels and people would have these panics over stupid things. We've got plenty of trees, folks. You don't need to panic over toilet paper. And yet we were, because they heard in Venezuela they had a shortage. Well, that was different. But the panic shortages seem to be over with, and they're actually offering certain discounts on things. And like, how can we have, you know, in this bad economy and recession, where this is like, well, this is interesting. So you can get some bargains, you know, and you can do fairly well for yourself. And it's always nice to have an efficient car anyway, if you can. But if the contraction starts and the unemployment starts now, they don't have those same COVID pay you not to work money. Has that basically run out? That's stopped now, as far as I know, right?
Say that again, Greg.
The when they used to have the COVID, you don't have to work bill. They pay like $600-$700 a week for not working.
Yeah.
That's gone. That's all stopped, right?
Oh, yeah, been gone. Yeah, okay. That went away, I'm wanting to say October of last year. But it was supposed to go away in March, right? Then they extended it to July, and then they extended it to October again.
But they haven't extended it
so
since.
They get another 6 months of it.
Which was stupid. I mean, that's one of the dumbest bills we ever had. That's what caused a huge amount of our inflation, that in giving away $1,400 per person, which I happily took because I'm not stupid, but it was still wrong to do it, you know, to actually do that. So are there any major unemployment funding bills coming up, or I think they're just waiting until the numbers get up again, which, of course, would be inflationary?
I don't know. I mean, really, the next inflation report is going to come out here in about a week or so. You know, so I'm really kind of curious where it's at. You know, if it's still high, you know, with mortgage interest rates, because the 10-year treasury actually went down, you know, mortgage interest rates have kind of dipped. Does that mean they're not going to go back up? No, I think the Fed's still going to raise the rate, you know, again here soon. You know, I mean, they're going to have to stay ahead of the curve. You know, I'm really not sure, to be honest.
So housing is going to get more expensive or less expensive, or the financing is going to get more expensive?
So the housing market started to slow down. I mean, ideally, that's what they wanted. You know, I mean, housing market slows down, building costs go down. You know, I mean, obviously rates go up, interest rates in banks and things like that go up. So people start putting money in the bank. You know, I mean, they are succeeding in that. But how quickly is it having an impact on inflation? That's the question.
So yeah, I'm getting a little background noise. Somebody's making breakfast back there. Pianchi, do you have a quick point?
I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's kind of funny. It goes on the permanent podcast, so if someone screams something outrageous, we're going to hear it. Pianchi, did you have a question? And then I got one more for Derek, if we have time.
No, I'm about ran out of questions. You know, palladium is worth much, much more than gold, but when people go to cash in their gold, aren't they asking for U.S. dollars, which is already in a terrible shape?
Are you asking me, Pionki? I'm sorry. I was saying bye to my wife.
Yeah, you the money man.
He's distracted.
What
That's
was that
okay. Good? It's only it's live radio.
You
the
money
we'll
man.
Wait.
You got your 1 ounce of gold. You got your 1 ounce of gold, and you go to cash it in. You cashing it in for dollars, aren't you?
I mean, you are cashing it in for dollars. Absolutely right. But I mean, when you cash it in again, you have to keep in mind you're probably going to lose 10% in that. If you're buying physical gold and selling physical gold. Now, I mean, if you're buying gold shares, that's a little bit different. You know, I mean, we have our own charges, which is normally very, very minimal in comparison.
Yeah, but the value of money is going down. So when you're selling your gold, you're actually selling gold for a lowered value of currency. I think that's the point Pionki's making.
Is it you're saying lose the value?
Well, no. In other words, the value of the dollar has dropped. So if you're selling your gold now, you're getting dollars, but those dollars are worth less than those dollars were worth a year ago because of inflation.
No. Well, okay. That's a little bit of a double-edged sword.
Oh, because you're getting more dollars? Okay.
You're getting more dollars, and then two, our dollar is now more powerful, right? Because the dollar has gained in value, right? But it also gains in value because of inflation, because of our rising interest rates, and meaning our bonds are now worth more, so the dollar's worth more, right? So it's easily to look at it like that, but I think there's a little, it's, for me who sees it a little bit deeper, it's a little bit more complex. But I guess yes and no. It's kind of hard to say.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, inflation and recession and all these things are, you know, inflation creates more dollars, which lowers the value of them. You know, recession contracts the economy, which might make it more valuable. Economics is complex. It's very complicated. And that's what makes it interesting. What do you see, if you can put the crystal ball on, so we're not going to hold you to it, but it seems to me that the Democrat Marxists in power have not figured out yet that inflation is caused by increased spending. And they think they're doing Americans a favor. We're going to save American money by, you know, spending billions of dollars and buying their prescription drugs from whatever else. We're going to save Americans money by, you know, putting strategic petroleum reserve oil out there. They're not saving us money at all because they're causing the problems in the first place. So they haven't recognized that they're causing the problems. They're causing the inflation, and that they're using our own money to give us things that we could buy on our own anyway with our own money and calling it a benefit.
Right.
It's really right. Screwed up.
It really is. And I mean, it's, you know, I mean, there's no one easy answer for that. I mean, our government is very good at finding ways to get more money out of our pockets. You know what I mean? It's a thing that we've gotten comfortable with. You know, I mean, and I mean, obviously, you know, that's why people have jobs, to say, okay, well, if you do this, you can avoid these taxes later on, but nobody wants to do this. They want their money now, and they want to go make those decisions. And you have to understand that we're taxed at every level, right? At every level. You get paid, you take your money, you go somewhere else, you get taxed again, right?
Yep.
You buy another product, you get taxed again, right? You buy gas, you get taxed again, right? We're taxed at every level. If you're better at saving things and being a little bit more conservative with your spending, you can avoid all of that. You know, it's just nobody wants to do that. They just, I mean, I'll call it, you know, needs versus wants kind of thing.
Yeah. People are like little children when it comes to money. But the logic that escapes me, because they want to get rid of inflation, but they're thinking that raising the interest rates and slowing down the economy is going to do it, while at the same time, they're spending the money that's causing the inflation. And they don't seem to see the disconnect as to why that doesn't work and what makes sense. So it looks like we're going to get more inflation because they're spending more money, which means they'll have to raise interest rates even higher, but you're still what I call standing on the accelerator and the brake at the same time. You're going nowhere, but you're creating a whole lot of smoke in the process. It's not good for the engine, you know? So you're destroying the engine while you're standing on the brake and the accelerator.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I agree. I agree. You're just sitting there doing donuts.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Well, I gotta get Greg. I've been a little bit long, so you guys have yourself a nice day, and you know, we'll see you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks for the extra time. I appreciate it.
Yep, no problem. Bye bye.
All right, take care. Derek Park, Edward Jones, catch the beginning of his announcement for all his contact information. So let's take a little break now, play a couple things, and we'll be back with our Carrie Lake and Mark Fincham discussion at the remainder of the show. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. From addiction to achievement, that is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. MyPillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at MyPillow.com/WYL. That's MyPillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strike Force is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines. This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
you will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery, December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction, so that you would learn to hate your country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever, because they came from a power higher than government. That we the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. All right, let's come back for our closing half hour of the week here. We've got Pianki, and here we are. We find ourselves at another, We find ourselves another weekly summary, so I'm putting it all together. Amber should be back next week so we can talk constitutional stuff. But, yeah, interesting week, huh? Nope, he's not there yet. Oh, wait. Actually, I can start an article here. I'm sure Pianki will join us in just a second. This, what I want to talk about, you know, this whole election in Arizona, this is critical. Trump's doing a speech tonight.
I think it's at 8 o'clock Mountain time. So it's, or 7 o'clock Mountain, whatever it is. I think it's 7 Mountain, 6 Pacific, which would make it 8 Central and 9 Eastern. And he's in Arizona. I mean, what happened in Arizona is earth shattering. What happened in Arizona is the most amazing thing for this country. What happened in Arizona is that the people, you know, in their wisdom, in their vote, rejected everything that that was being told to them by the major media, by the Republicans, you know, by the Democrat Party, and everybody else. And they elected the people that are best in the best position to not only fix elections in the future from the corruption and the stuff that's going on, but to correct the 2020 election, which Trump won. And so this is why this is so amazing. And then, of course, you know, Carrie Lake's going to declare that there's an invasion going on and invoke invasion powers against the Brandon insurrection, you know, which is the current occupation government in the White House. The best article that I found on this is the America First Report, J.D. Rucker, and this is from August 3rd. And the headline is Carrie Lake wins nail biter in Arizona despite clear mail-in ballot fraud. So they tried to steal this election too. And so what I've said was, it's fascinating. They're so stupid. They tried to steal the election the exact same way they tried to steal the election in 2020, confirming that's a stolen election because they're doing the same stuff. So the fact that they did the same thing, same exact stuff again, you know, proves that that's how they normally operate. You know, they proved the case against election fraud by trying to steal this election too. It's really fascinating. They're idiots, but they're very good at what they do in terms of stealing. So Carrie Lake wins nail biter in Arizona despite clear mail-in ballot fraud. Article says, for a while, it looked like they might actually accomplish their goal and install Karen Taylor Robson as their uniparty. And that's UNI party, uniparty. That's what they call the Democrats and the Republicans, the uniparty swamp nominee. But Carrie Lake's popularity proved too difficult to overcome. Yeah, she was in media for a long time, too. So a lot of times it takes a media personality. You look at Trump. Trump would not have been president, I think, in 2016 had he not been a media, you know, dominating figure. So everybody knew who he was. Carrie Lake did the news in Arizona for 20 years or whatever. So people knew who she was. You know, so when she said things, people believed her. And it wasn't as easy to do the propaganda against her because she already had a track record of honesty as a journalist. And so that's the same thing here. So having initial popularity, if I ever run for office, which I won't, but if I ever do, you know, and I've got, you know, 10 years of action radio experience, you know, nationwide, people know who I am. And I'd be a lot, you know, higher up, big leg up over someone who was just, you know, trying to do the same thing, but it wasn't as well known. Pianki, did you come back? Sounded like I heard. Oh, I think Pianki left us. Oh, that's okay. His call dropped for whatever reason. So we'll get that figured out. Oh, yeah, wait a minute. What's happening to my screen here? There we go. That's better. You know, one thing happens and everything kind of gets destroyed. It's weird. All right, I got to find my article. Where did my article go? Oh, that's weird. I think I held on to it for some reason and it disappeared. All right, now I got to find my article. Hang on. Ugh, this is very strange. I had a perfectly good article. I know where to find it on Facebook. I'm just trying to figure where it went. Good. All right, how do I get my article back? All right, hang on. Let me just play with a couple things here, see if I can find it. See where it went. It's probably in my history. So let me get a new window. Oh, there it is. God, I didn't even know what I did, but I found it. So I got to do something else here. It's too big. Didn't bring it back down. This sucks. No, that's not what I want to do either. I'm having computer problems because I'm pushing the wrong buttons. Yeah, let me go find my article again. That's not working. Yeah. Oh, that's not the right one here. All right. I'm sorry. Let me see if I can get back to where I was. Ah, there we go. Okay. Now I can't seem to move that. See, here's my problem. I've got to get the green thing out. All right. Ah, I did it. I actually fixed this. I don't even know what I did, but it was too big for my screen. All right. Now we're getting back to normal. Now I can see my production screen. Now I have my article. Let me get back to reading. Excuse me. Despite a double-digit polling lead a day before the election, Republican gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake was nearly stunned by Karen Taylor Robson in the Arizona primary. Lake spent the entire night clawing back from being way behind. Yeah, that had me worried, too. The reason? Early voting and mail-in ballots were the first counted, and Robson outperformed anyone's wildest dreams in those areas. What that means is she cheated. Okay. You know, the polls are generally pretty accurate. And if somebody wildly goes above or below what the polling is, and this generally, you know, you can take a look at cheating first. Anyway, this is in the in-person voting won out. delivering the victory for Lake. So this is why it's so important to vote in person. Okay, we all said this, you know, vote in person. It's much harder to cheat. The mail-in ballots, the early ballots, those are the cheating ballots. And you know, if 100,000 people vote and 150,000 ballots end up in the ballot boxes, you know, you can pretty well assume something went wrong. Anyway, it says, I'll go ahead and say it. This is the article. This is J.D. Rock. He says, I'll go ahead and say it. The powers that be tried to steal this election. And that's the one, not 2020, the one they just held in Arizona. He says, I will be attacked for even saying that. They'll ask, where's the proof? As with the 2020 election, it won't matter how much proof we present. They'll still say there was no voter fraud. That has sadly become the new normal as we watch America become a post-truth society. I cover this in an overnight broadcast of the J.D. Rucker show. Okay, I'm not sure who J.D. Rucker is. I guess I'll have to find out. He says, I detailed in the show, there were three reasons they needed to fire all of their weapons for this particular race. First, Lake said, that's Carrie Lake, said that if she gets elected, she will dig into the files buried away in the current administration's vaults and uncover what really happened during the 2020 election. Well, they can't have that because obviously they cheated and stole it, right? This made her a threat to very powerful people, including the Republicans, Reed Geldings, in state offices who were likely involved in some way in stealing the state for Joe Biden. Yeah, so the reason Joe Biden's in the White House is because of Republicans. Oh, Democrats stole the election, but Republicans made it possible. Okay, they enabled it. And so there's a uniparty. There's a one-party system. It's the deep state versus, you know, Trump and America firsters. So that's just kind of how it's shaping up. Article says, second, the powers that be and their pawns, such as Fox News, Chris Christie, and others, are desperate to dislodge Donald Trump from leading the Republican Party. They aren't just going after him. They're going after anyone who supports him. Oh, that would be me, by the way. Considering his strong endorsement and rallies for Lake, this near loss will be portrayed as a major blow to his sway over the party. Well, this is why they're holding the rally tonight. It's going to be really interesting to hear what Trump says about that with Carrie Lake winning the primary. And she's won the primary. She's probably going to win the general. I don't think that's going to be a real problem. The primary was the big one. And then he says, third, and arguably most importantly, they needed to prop up Mike Pence, who I call the traitor, as the front runner for 2024. And I told this a year ago. Mike Pence, they're going to try and make the deep state wants Mike Pence for the Republican nominee. They do. They want him following in the fine tradition of John McCain and Mitt Romney. They want him to be the Republican frontrunner, the moderate who can win, and then he's going to lose. He'll lose to Michelle Obama or whoever the Democrats run, Gavin Newsom. That's the plan. That's always the plan. I don't know how George Bush won, George Bush the younger one, except that he was a globalist, much like Clinton before him, so there really wasn't that much difference. So I never voted for George Bush. I voted a libertarian those years. Anyway, this is third and most arguably, most importantly, they needed to prop up Mike Pence. Okay, he says, it struck me as J.D. Rucker. It struck me as odd that he made the endorsement of Robson. She was so far behind in the polls that it seemed impossible for his endorsement to have an impact. I dismissed it as their belief that if they could make the final margin lower than the polling margin, corporate media can still count it as a win for Pence. The headlines touting Pence, despite the loss, are already being written. Yeah, Pence is he's dangerous. Some people say he's incredibly stupid too. I don't think so. I never put incompetence, you know, above lying and deceit, because those take more intelligence. Anyway, he says what I didn't. He says the headlines touting Pence, despite the loss, are already being written. He says what I didn't know was that they put all their eggs in the Arizona basket. They knew they were going to try and steal this election, so it would be a huge feather in Pence's cap to endorse Robson and get all the kudos from their corporate conservative media shills, such as Fox News and the Washington Examiner. Frankly, it was nearly a brilliant move, one that is intended to destroy the country by bringing control of the GOP back under the helm of the uniparty swamp. That would be the deep state, for another name. He says, they're going to try and tell us, that it's normal for mail-in votes to vastly favor one candidate and for in-person voting to favor another. You know which one's the good one, right? Yeah. He says that may make sense in a Republican versus Democrat race. It makes no sense in a Republican primary, which is more likely that Republicans who mail in their ballots are so divergent from the rest of the party that they swing 25-plus points towards a single candidate, or that mail-in ballots were set up by the powers that be to favor their preferred candidate. What do you think, right? In reality, this was a shocking attempted theft that fell short. But they will pretend like it was a massive advertising that will pretend that it was the massive advertising spends. Pence's endorsements and Lake's conspiracy theories that nearly pulled off the impossible. Yeah. This is so there you go. That's the article. This is quite fascinating. And so let me get to the one on let's put the one I want. Where's the one I want from? No, I had one from the National Examiner, from the Washington Examiner. It's mentioned the Examiner is a real shell, a shill of these folks. Let me see if I can find the Washington. Where's my Washington Examiner article? That's no fun. So I just read that one. I got that one. That's the one I want. I'm having real troubles today, obviously, because there was a great article. Maybe I deleted it by accident. That's entirely possible. I do stuff like that. Let me see if I can do something here. No, can't find it. All right, I'm going to go to Facebook because I know I put it there somewhere. So the Washington Examiner had an interesting piece, and this is very typical. And the reason I wanted to get to this one, it is very typical of the horrible articles that are being written. The propaganda is legendary at this point, and legion. There's so much propaganda out there that you just kind of have to go through it and wade through. So I'm going to pull up my Facebook page, and I'm going to go back and find my article, my Washington Examiner article, and get to that. Like I say, I hit the wrong button. And once you do that, this is why I don't like grouping articles together, but apparently I did. And then once you do that, then things get very strange. It's not that hard to find this stuff. All right. Here we go. So let's talk about the other candidate, Mark Finchem. That's I-N-C-H-E-M, Mark Finchem. Finchem, who's going to be Secretary of State in Arizona. Secretary of State controls the elections, right? So all those Democrat secretaries of state that allowed for mail-in voting and ballot boxes and early voting and all the things that they weren't allowed to do, but they changed the rules because of, COVID, you know, that's where all the fraud took place, you know, ballot harvesting, things like that. So this is one of the sources that J.D. Rucker says is bogus, but let's read it anyway, and I'll show you exactly why. Washington Examiner, midterms 2022, election skeptic Mark Finchem wins Arizona Secretary of State GOP primary. But they can call him a GOP candidate. You know, they couldn't call him, GOP challenger. No, they call him election skeptic because that's the label, or election denier. Or what is, so there's another term in here they have too that they use. It's really kind of fascinating. So anyway, this is how the propaganda works. So this is election skeptic Mark Finchem wins Arizona Secretary of State GOP primary. This is by Matthew Wilson, reporting interns. now they're having their interns write the stories. It's kind of funny. All right. Anyway, so intern Matthew Wilson, August 3rd, wrote this. He says, a Trump-endorsed Arizona lawmaker who wants to, quote, decertify the 2020 election results won the Republican nomination for Arizona Secretary of State on Tuesday, becoming the latest support of unsupported election theories backed by the former president to win the GOP's nod for the top elections oversight job. That is full of propaganda. This person, this intern, what's his name here? Matthew Wilson. I guarantee you that Matthew Wilson, intern, never looked into any fraud in the 2020 election. I guarantee they never asked a single question. And I guarantee you the thought never entered their mind that maybe there is some truth to this, that maybe the election was stolen. You know, if it wasn't stolen, maybe it was manipulated. If it wasn't manipulated, maybe it was, maybe there were some flaws in the system, or, you know, maybe some technology flaws or anything, but not a single question. Nope. He goes right for it. Trump endorsed Arizona lawmaker who wants to decertify the 2020 election results. Well, you should decertify. I want the same thing because you have to decertify because Brandon didn't win. It's all a fraud. So the person that didn't win, you know, the cheater gets decertified. That's how it works. Works in a race. You know, you can win a race, and if you cheat, you lose. You can get second in a race. If you cheat, you still lose. Third in a race. It doesn't matter where you come in. If you cheat, you lose your position in the race. So even if the cheating did not change the course of the election, it's still cheating and you still lose, okay? Because cheating is wrong. But look at this thing here saying latest supporter of unsupported election theories. Okay, first of all, they're not theories; they've been proven over and over in the Arizona audit and all the Juliana Jenna Ellis hearings, and the mountains of evidence, the mountains of videos, the mountains of affidavits, the mountains of 2,000 mules. You know, you've got the pictures of the ballot being scanned, same ballot scanned, you know, dozens of times. You got the pictures of the Republicans being thrown out of the count so they could then cheat. There's some, this, you know, the idea of unsupported election theories can only be said by somebody who knows nothing. They don't know anything about the 2020 election, or they wouldn't have said that. Anyway, then it says State Rep Mark Finchem handily dispatched. He didn't say beat, you know, or won. Is dispatched. Okay, that's like, you know, that's like a hunting term when you dispatch an animal. Okay, this is, all these words are carefully chosen, and not by the intern, I guarantee it. State Rep. Mark Pinchem handily. Sorry, there's a fly on my microphone. It's Florida. What do you want? State Rep. Mark Pinchem handily dispatched a handful of Republican rivals on Tuesday, including advertising executive Bo Lane, who was supported by Governor Doug Ducey, another rhino, and much of the state's GOP establishment, that's code name for rhino, but whom Pinchem disparaged as a rhino, or what we call a transgender Democrat, or Republican in name only. So Republicans in name only on this show are transgender Democrats. I mean, we just like to be accurate. This is what we do here. Right? Anyway, so I got lines open. Looks like it's just me talking. So feel free to join me, 215-383-3832. This is a really good time to talk on the radio just because it's Friday and you're ready for your weekend. You know, and there's nothing on live chat either. So just me. Okay, I'll keep going. I'm having fun. Pinchem had 38.7% of the vote with 65% of the ballots counted when the race was called by the Associated Press. Much to their regret, I'm sure. Pinchem has advanced a slate of hard right election changes. Okay. Now, they don't say election reforms. See, if the Democrats do it, they're called election reforms. If the a Trump first, you know, American patriot does it, now they're hard right election changes. Okay. So he says Pinchem has advanced a slate of hard right election changes that he would pursue if elected, including bans on early voting and electronic vote counting machines. Well, that's a good thing. As well as strict limits on the use of mail-in voting. Well, that's a good thing, too. The 65-year-old also wants to get – oh, I guess they're implying he's old. I'll be there in a couple of years. The 65-year-old also wants to give the Arizona legislature the power to, quote, decertify election results. Well, I think they already have that power. You know, it's not, you don't have to give it to them. They already have it. You know, they could decertify at any time. They should decertify it after the Arizona audit because the states simply elect – states control the election. So that's what states do. States don't even have to have an election. They can just take a vote themselves. Anyway, decertify election results, and he introduced a resolution in February calling on the state leaders to, quote, set aside and decertify the 2020 election results in three of Arizona's most populous counties. In other words, the ones that cheated. So I get to fill in the gap. This guy's obviously not doing it. It says Pinchem was present in the January 6th Capitol riot. It wasn't a riot. It was a Capitol Hill invitational walk-in, and the fact that he was present means nothing. A lot of people were present. A lot of Democrats present. Of course, they weren't being arrested for being political prisoners, right? Pinchem was president of the January 6th Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in. And following the 2020 election, he asked the Arizona legislature to appoint a slate of electors who would ignore the state's election results, because they were wrong, and cast electoral votes for former President Donald Trump. Well, because he won. I mean, I have to add this in. The examiner's not putting this in. In Trump's September 2021 endorsement of Pinchem, the ex-president, see, not the previous president, the ex-president. That's what they call him, right? So it's always disparaging. You know, you don't say former president. You know, you say former president for the ones they like. They say ex-president for the ones they don't like. The ex-president praised his incredibly powerful stance on the voter fraud that took place in the 2020 presidential election scam. So what they're saying is the fraud, talking about the fraud is a scam. See how they do it? So they always discredit anybody who thinks that there was any problem with the 2020 election is automatically a scammer, a fake, a denier, making stuff up, or conspiracy theories or unproven theories. None of that is true, by the way, but that's what they're saying. Back to the article. Pinchem is not the first Trump-endorsed election theorist. So that's the term of the new one. Election theorist. What's an election theorist? So they're not saying a conspiracy theorist. They've actually dropped that. But that's the implication. If you're an election theorist, you're making up theories about the election. Like Trump won. Well, a theory, that's actually a proven fact. You know, the fact that people don't want to look at the proof, that's a different matter. Pinchem is not the first Trump-endorsed election theorist to prevail over more mainstream challengers. In other words, he beat the rhinos. All right. Is mainstream a good thing? Is that what you're implying? It seems to be what they're implying. Mainstream challengers and their bids for a top elections overnight post. Christina Camaro, a former community college professor and poll challenger who gained widespread popularity in conservative circles after claiming to have witnessed voter fraud firsthand, won the GOP's nomination for Michigan Secretary of State at a state party convention in April. Camaro maintains that Trump won Michigan in 2020. Well, she sounds like a good person now. And she received the former president's endorsement shortly before the convention. And Jim Marchant, a former Nevada state assemblyman who ran on a platform closely aligned with Pinchem's and denies that President Joe Biden won his state in 2020, which of course he didn't, won the GOP, not Nevada. So these are other offices. So it looks like the other offices are doing just fine in different elections. This is really exciting. You know, what's going on now is really exciting because for the first time, you know, there's a glimmer of hope that this election is actually going to get corrected, that the Brandon insurrection is going to go away, that they may actually be decertified. And they should be decertified because they didn't win. And here's the thing, too. You know, we don't have to prove that there's vote fraud. They have to prove that the ballots were legal. See, the proof of an election, the proof of a ballot is on the ballot itself to prove that the signatures are valid, that it was duly cast, that it's not a duplicate, that it's not ballot harvested. You know, the ballot has to prove itself. What's the word I'm trying to think of? Legal, viable, honest. You know, you don't have to prove vote fraud. You just have to prove that you have to have enough votes that were legal. And so the burden of proof is on the vote. The burden of proof is not on the on people to prove that there was fraud, which is kind of interesting how it works. You know, with people, it's different. People are assumed innocent. Ballots are assumed not assumed to be anything until they're proven to be valid. Got about 10 minutes left. By Friday, I'm like wiped out. So I may shut the show off a little bit early just because I'm completely it's been a long week. Anyway, so we've got some things for next week. I'm going to look at Kristen Sinema, see if I can find out where she caved. I know where Manchin caved, you know, because he always caves. He puts up a brave front, but apparently he always caves. So that's how that works. We've got Matt Gaetz's gun bill. I'm going to present a better one to him. I think he's going to be in Gulf Breeze Monday. So I'm going to drop down there and see if I can get him a better bill for himself. Governor DeSantis suspends a Soros Tampa district attorney. That's a good thing. And Trump's got a rally tonight. And so this is going to be really exciting. So I'm waiting for Trump to use the words, you know, the really big words. The election was a fraud. It was stolen. Mike Pence was in on it. Here's how they did it. They did it during January 6th. They had the Trump supporters, you know, walk into the top of the Capitol, you know, while the real coup took place under the Capitol, where the representatives and senators got the talk. And the talk was, you better support Brandon or you're not going to get your committee chair. You're not going to get anything. You know, you're going to lose your campaign money. You know, you're going to get beaten by we're going to get someone to beat you. We're going to primary you, as they say, you know, by your own party is going to kick you out. So you better support Brandon because that's what the deep state wants. I mean, that's what I think happened. I can't prove it. I don't think anybody's going to admit it, but we've talked about that before. So the real coup is what happened under the Capitol, not on top. On top, that was a distraction. So now we got to find out, we'll see what Carrie Lake does. If she declares Arizona is being invaded and invokes Article 4, Section 4, the invasion thing, then the federal government is duty-bound to defend Arizona. Well, they're not going to, but she can call the National Guard. You know, my bill on civil asset forfeiture, every illegal alien can have anything they've accumulated in this country taken because it was accumulated illegally because they're an illegal alien. Okay. There are ways to fight it. So I'm going to be on a show tonight. Yeah, let's see if I can find out where my show is tonight. It's TNT Network, and it's going to be Joseph Arthur. So I'm going to be on Joseph Arthur's show on TNT. That's going to be fun. So catch me tonight. It's going to be in the middle of Trump's speech, so you have to catch Trump's, catch it on YouTube later. So that's going to be tonight. Monday, I've got another interview. You know, I'll tell you about that Monday. I'm going to be busy. You know, so Action Radio, the way I see this going, more and more hosts are going to switch from talk host to action host. They're going to support our bills. They're going to give their bills to their audience. They're going to teach their audience what I teach all you folks. You know, all you have to do is copy the bill link, send it to your member of Congress, your representative and your senator, and say, I want this bill. And that's it. Send it to media. Send it to talk shows. Say, this is a great bill. This is citizen legislation. We the people wrote it. And I want this made into law. That's it. That's all you have to do. It's very simple. And so we'll see what happens with that. So I think I've covered everything. So it's been a great week. We've got more stuff coming up next week. Again, we've got Michelle Salzman, who's running for the Florida State Legislature from the Pensacola area. The Panhandle of Florida, she'll be on. We've got Captain Tom Peters, who's nationally known. You know, one of the folks that was evicted from the military unjustly because all he wanted was to get his constitutional rights and not take the snake oil jab because it's experimental and dangerous. And whatever happens else next week, I have no idea, but it should be interesting. All right, I think I'm done. I think I've covered everything I wanted to cover this week. And so I start my weekend a little bit early. If you want to contribute to us, paypal.com/paypalme/actionradio. We have a Skype line live. If you ever want to call in the day before and I'll get your account okayed. We've got three companies where we have discounts. Graith Care, G-R-A-I-T-H, Graith Care. We get a 10% discount with our code W-Y-L. We've got MyPillow, MyPillow products. Go to MyPillow at MyPillow.com/W-Y-L. It stands for Write Your Laws. Get a big discount on products there. Strikeforce Energy Drinks, 20% discount there. Same thing, StrikeforceEnergy.com with W-Y-L. That'll get you the discount there. And if you want to advertise on our show or contribute to the show, you know, like I say, contact me directly, Greg@writeyourlaws.com. Happy to make you a commercial. Happy to have more and more sponsors on board. That's where we're going with this. Just a matter of time. We're going to get there. And so the future is citizen legislation. The future is people writing laws that they consent to be governed by. You know, more hosts present to more and more audiences. The whole thing grows and snowballs big time. We get in the national debate. We're the center of all of it because, you know, this is where it all started. And then we change the laws that come out of Congress and the laws that come out of the state houses. Make them fair. Make them equal for everybody. Make them increase our freedom. I mean, that's the whole goal here. So thank you for an amazing week. Check out the Doctor Show yesterday. You know, the podcast is available. Oh, that was an incredible show. The things we talked about, staggering. Unbelievable. You get really bright people together. Good stuff happens. And so that, we had other great guests last week. It's been quite a week. So we're just going to keep snowballing, keep getting better, keep getting larger, and keep doing what we do. So thank you for joining us here. I'm going to end the episode just a few, like 4 minutes early. But I'm done, and I've said what I wanted to. So you can catch us at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction as our show site. Our legislative site, www.writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws.com. I'll be back Monday morning at 7 o'clock Central Time, and I'll see you then.